Honor the Texas flag. I pledge allegiance to thee, Texas, one state under God, one and indivisible.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
And now, if I could get Ms. Mendoza and Ms. Earls. Ms. Mendoza, the CIS Commission, and Ms. Earls, the vision statement. Thank you.
To provide high-quality educational opportunities that will inspire all students to acquire and use the knowledge and skills needed to become leaders and productive citizens in a culturally diverse and technologically sophisticated world.
And our vision is to become a premier school district with nationally ranked biliterate graduates that will be able to create, collaborate, communicate, critically think, and apply the knowledge and skills to be successful in post-secondary life and in the workforce, and most importantly, in life.
Thank you, Mrs. Mendoza and Mrs. Searles. Ms. Gomez, will you please go to the next agenda item?
Two special presentation, A, El Paso Electric and Clear Results Score Program Check Presentation. Mr. Buddy is the presenter.
Ladies and gentlemen of the board, President Quintana, Dr. Galaviz,
yes.
El Paso Electric, in partnership with the Clear Result, is here to have a check presentation for some of the energy management savings that were completed there at Conotillo High School. I'd like to introduce people. They've got a document to hand out to you.
Thank you, Mr. Padilla. Thank you.
Desmond Machuca with El Paso Electric Energy Efficiency Department. Thank you for having us here tonight. We want to congratulate you on your sixth year participating in our El Paso Electric SCORE program, which stands for Schools Conserving Resources. The energy efficiency incentives you received in 2013 are represented on this check here tonight for just over $17,000. This brings the total incentives for El Paso Electric since you first began participating to $101,881.
Wow.
So congratulations. Not only do you receive the financial incentives, but the new energy efficient lighting will provide better quality of light, last hours longer, and reduce maintenance and operating costs. Thank you, Mr. Padilla and Canutillo Independent School District. El Paso Electric looks forward to continuing to work with you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
The more we save, like we turn off our lights at school, we close the door with the AC on, the more money we have money for the classroom, right? So this is a lesson in life for you, okay?
Turn off the lights at home too.
Tell them, parents.
At home too.
Our next agenda item?
The El Paso Area High School Cupcake Battle winner. Unfortunately, she is not here.
She was not able to make it today. And Mr. Tashmir, is she here? I don't think she is. But we wanted just to bring up to your attention that a culinary arts student from Canopy High School was judged to have the best cupcake recipe in the region, and is going to represent El Paso at the state cupcake tournament. It's just like the TV show Cupcake Wars. So Cashmere awesome. Flores, culinary arts student of Chef Simpsons, was deemed to have the best cupcake. It's a s'mores cupcake. So we're very thrilled to have her represent El Paso and the state competition in Allen, Texas. And she's been featured in several news stories here in El Paso. She's going to be making also her morning show debut on Channel 7 later on this month. We're going to be sharing her recipe as well. So we just wanted to congratulate her. Well, thank you for being down here. I was going to call you down here to sketch with your down here and stuff. We'll kick it off. Well, what an amazing spring semester we have had so far. It's with great pride that I bring great news about the work our students and employees are performing on behalf of the Canopy Independent School District and the community we all serve. We kick off this month's recognition with a little spring cleaning of sorts. Well, it's more like a sweep. At this year's Bilingual Education Emphasizing Multicultural Settings Conference, better known as BEAMS, educators and volunteers working in Canutillo took the three prizes awarded each year. It's no surprise, as Canutillo ISD has developed a reputation of being a leader in language acquisition, and each year, experts and educators from throughout the world come to our schools to see what our teachers do to get results. This work was recognized by BEAMS attendees who voted CISD personnel and volunteers as the Advocate of the Year, Teacher of the Year, and Administrator of the Year. BEAMS also recognized two other CISD-related people as nominees for awards, which shows there is a lot of depth to the great work being done in bilingualism here in Canutillo. Please help me welcome the BEAMS Advocate of the Year, Aldeate Middle School parent, Joan Guerin Lattis. Administrator of the Year, Canutillo Middle School Assistant Principal, Viviano Bibi Maldonado. Canutillo Elementary School teacher Carlos Aceves. We also want to recognize two CISD individuals that were nominated for these awards as well. Nominee for BEAMS Administrator of the Year, CISD's Director of Advanced Academic Languages, Dr. Marisa Garcia. And I don't believe she was able to make it, but another parent in the school district was nominated for Advocate of the Year. And it's Campillo High School parent said it's Tina De La Rosa. She's sitting in the crowd. Please come up. Do we have the principals of each of these schools also come up and post for a picture? Well, don't always get the recognition that their older peers do. Reporters don't show up with cameras to interview them after the game. Their photo's not normally in the front page of the sports page. But ask any coach at Campillo High School, and they will tell you that success at the high school level starts with the middle schools. CIC is blessed to have two outstanding middle school programs that are channeling champions to Campillo High School. Tonight, we celebrate the work being done at Aldrete Middle School. Few things point out to dominance like the cross-country teams from AMS. The Eagles are a force to be reckoned with in the El Paso Athletic Conference, and proof positive is the school's performance in the 2013-14 championship. The seventh grade girls won the championship, as did the eighth grade girls, or also the eighth grade boys. In all, AMS took three of the four championships in this cross-country year, so that's dominance. Could the Aldrete Middle School seventh grade boys, girls, eighth grade boys, and eighth grade girls cross-country teams and their coaches please come up and be recognized by the Board of Trustees?
Thank you.
All right. It's not the trustees in the back up there in the top area. And then all adults up there. And then the mature adults down in the bottom. All right. We're going to need to go really tight, guys, okay?
Kind of go sideways. You're on that side, face that way, and you're on that side, face that way.
That'd be the middle. Does that work?
Good? Here we go, guys. One, two, three. One, two, three. That one.
We would also like to, on behalf of the cross country team, we would like to present this to Dr. Delavis.
No, you can't stay there all night, sorry.
What did she do to you?
Yes, no.
What did you do to me?
I haven't
yeah,
yet.
What did you do to me?
Yes, Kyle.
I'm going to go over here.
Thank you, cross country. But we have even more champions here tonight today from AMS. As we will see later on this program, penalty youth developing into a powerhouse in basketball. Again, our younger kids are setting the pace for the work that is being done by Coach Morales at CHS. Alvarez Middle School 8th grade boys basketball team played a tough season and fought all the way to the Western Division Conference Championship, where they emerged victorious. They didn't stop there, however, and they wanted to prove to more than just the western part of the county that AMS is a house of champions. So they headed into the Little 12 Athletic Conference Championship against the famous Wildcats, knowing they had a good chance of winning the county championship. When it was all said and done, the MS Eagles beat the Wildcats by a score of 34-17. Ladies and gentlemen, please help us welcome the Little 12 Conference champions, the 8th grade boys basketball team from Alameda.
Congratulations. Good job, man. Good job to keep you going. Congrats, guys. Congratulations. That's great. Awesome, guys. Congratulations, man. Congrats. Congratulations. No wonder you guys are in basketball. Jesus, stop growing already. Congratulations. Congratulations. You again?
Yeah, I'm me again.
Oh, wow.
Can't wait for a new gym to come up.
There you go.
I'm so excited.
No blinks. play jeans.
Okay, last time. Eyes open, smile, no blue jeans.
Pictures, I don't want to get in your way.
Good job, guys.
Thank you. Her cemetery that we could practice as well.
Yes, that's right.
CHS varsity basketball team under the direction of Coach Morales is showing us that they too have what it takes to make it deep into the playoffs. The Eagles had a good season in District 2-4A, and they headed into the playoffs against a tough Bowie team. The game was close throughout, and with just seconds to go, the Eagles were down by 1 point. A Bowie foul gave the Eagles a chance to tie and even win the game. With the pressure of the game on the line, the Eagles made both drives and emerged as the bye district champions. The Eagles played. So if you're counting, that's three teams so far this year that played in the area round of the championships in the playoffs. And that's great news for Calatillo. Could the Calatillo High School varsity basketball team please come up and be recognized for winning the bi-district championship here in El Paso? Board members of the board, Dr. Galaviz, this concludes this month's board recognition.
See how she is?
Wow.
See how she is?
I gotta watch my nameplate too.
Turn it upside down. I'm gonna be Vidrin.
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 I just want to know.
See you, girl. I can share. That looks so good. Just that.
Thank you. Yeah. He sure fits in well. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
You know, you can book bookmark. And you can go through the agenda. Right? You pull down on the top, see the bookmark. You can see, like, the presentations, the board honors, you go through.
Ms. Gomez?
Oh, I guess that's the way it opens up.
Four. Will you please read the next agenda item?
Four. Open four. As President, we have two people to sign. We have two people assigned to speak. The first being Terrence A. Powers.
Microphone.
Right over here, sir.
Oh, okay, great. First time.
Welcome.
Okay. I'm certainly impressed with all the young people here tonight and all the achievements, and I want to congratulate y'all on that. I would like to bring up something, though. I am concerned about the level of taxation. It's not always a fun subject, but the level of taxation here at the Canyon Teal School District. As you probably realize, the school taxes take up probably the bulk of local taxation in a range of 50 or so percent or more, depending. We here in Canyon Teal have the highest rate in the entire El Paso District. On the low end, you have San Elizario with a rate of 1.160756, and at the high end, we're at 1.49000. Tonight, I only represent myself. Right? I live in the New Cimarron District, and as you know, there are a lot of homes up there, and they're expensive homes, relatively, for El Paso. To give you my concern, is like in my case, for example, I figure my house might be worth $300,000. Right? The difference between if I had a house here and I have one over at San L.A. is $1,000 a year, roughly, in taxes. And some of these homes that are going up here are much more expensive than mine. Okay, I think that, I guess my concern is that the board, I'd like the board to start looking at ways to get that tax rate down, maybe closer to the average. El Paso, for example, is at 1.235. The closest one to us is Isleta at 1.36. And that's basically all I'm saying tonight is I'd like to bring it to your attention. I don't know if anybody's brought it to the attention of the board before, but it is important and it affects people's lives. It affects no matter what the price of your house, you know what I mean? Sure would appreciate the board taking that into consideration in its future budgeting. And in when we're thinking about things like salaries, when we're thinking about things like programs, ways that we can maybe get that down a little bit. And that's, I guess, all I have, unless somebody has a response to do. And I don't expect a response necessarily.
Well, in open forum, it's not, we're supposed to listen.
Okay. Well, I know you wouldn't vote on anything. But anyway, I just want to bring it to everybody's attention. I appreciate your time.
Thank you, sir. Thank you so much.
Our second speaker is Marnie Rocha.
Welcome.
Thank you. I'm a little short here, so I'm going to have to move this down. I know you're probably saying to yourself, Marnie Rocha, you have so many blessings. You have a wonderful career at Canyon Teal. You've been blessed with these wonderful children. What else could you be asking for tonight? Today you have in front of you on one of your agenda items, the summer school site coordinator position. And I know, as we heard this young man speaking before me earlier, talking about monies, and I know monies are very important. We have to be physically responsible. But I also know one of the things that we can do here is invest in our leadership. Since I've been in Canateo, one thing I always hear is growing our own. And with the summer school site coordinator, it gives an opportunity for aspiring administrators, ICs, and assistant principals to get a taste of what it really is like to run a school. Summer school is really a school within a school. And in the case of the middle school, it's two middle schools together. Dr. Galavis always likes to say, the time is now, the time is now. That's one thing I always hear him say. We're planning for summer school right now. We're planning for summer school right now. And it's very hard for us as many times as the principal and as the assistant principal, as we're getting along and gearing up with testing, to also take this other additional thing of summer school. For many of us, it looks like it would probably be many of our instructional coaches that would apply for this position. Their contract ends about a week after the school year, and it would give them a valuable chance to stay and really see all those things of what it means to be an administrator. I really would think that this would be a great time to invest in our instructional coaches to get an opportunity to learn budgeting, to learn hiring, to learn scheduling, all these things that are important to our district. I know if we're asking for money thing, hey, why should we pay for it? You guys are doing it already. Well, we are doing it already, and it's killing us. I'm going to be quite honest. It really is. So we really would appreciate your support on the summer school site coordinator, and I put it to you and you wonderful people. You're making great decisions for our kids, and this would be another one to really invest in the leadership of Canateo, and especially our instructional coaches and APs. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Rocha.
Thank you.
Ms. Gomez, next agenda item.
Number 5, Board of Trustee Business. A, overview of policy instruction personnel student services committee on March 17, 2014. Ms. Gonzalez.
Okay. Yeah, this one, we don't have the minutes ready. Are we going to pull that agenda item? Is that where we put it?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
The overview of finance audit facilities plan committee meeting on March 19th, 2014.
We're pulling those minutes also. We're present.
C, discussion and possible action to approve resolution addressing TEA audit process, high school testing practices, and TASB position regarding testing. Mr. Rodriguez?
Just real quick, one other thing. We had some discussion, and I think we had the TASB resolution. We needed to give direction to legal on the TEA. Do you want me to read the TASB resolution?
Yes, sir. Would you please?
Whereas the Canateo Independent School District and the Canateo ISD Board of Trustees strives to achieve the best possible environment for educational purposes. Whereas school board trustees oversee management of the school districts, which are charged with educating the vast majority of children in the state. Whereas the Canateo ISD District is a member of the Texas Association of School Boards. And whereas the current environment of high stakes testing imposes ever-increasing pressure and unnecessary requirements for factual student achievement. And whereas students would benefit from more focused curriculum and actual instruction in core learning areas as opposed to learning test strategies. And whereas teachers can and should be evaluated based on actual student performance that measures learning and achievement and not test-taking mechanics. Now, therefore, be it resolved by the Board of Trustees of the Canateo ISD, City of El Paso County, Texas, that the matters of the facts stated in the preamble hereof are found and determined to be true and correct and are established as a position of Canateo ISD with the regards to legislation requiring financial disclosures from School of Trustees. Or, Canateo
Hillsdale ISD and member of TASB. Donahue ISD, member of TASB, believes that alternate programs for evaluation of student achievement should be explored on a statewide level, and TASB, as a resource for many school districts, processes should develop and implement research and training for alternative evaluation methods with the focus of improving and or eliminating the current high stakes testing model that is degrading instruction in classrooms across the state. A failure by TASB to address current concerns over high stakes testing practices will result in maintenance of status quo, which should not be tolerated by member districts of TASB. So what we're pretty much trying to tell TASB is that they need to take a more proactive approach when it comes to legislation in regards to high stakes testing. I think they've in the past just looked at the status quo and really don't want to, you know, ruffle feathers within the legislature, and we need them to take a more proactive approach. And so the thought behind this resolution was we need to tell TASB, hey, get it together, if not, you know. So if there's any discussion on this resolution, we could have that at this point.
No. You've got it. That's number one. That's my mistake. Okay. We had multiple revisions, and it looks like the one that we passed out has an old stuff in it that needs to come out.
Besides that, I move to approve.
I second the motion.
We have a motion and a second. Ms. Gomez?
Mr. Coronado?
Yes.
Mrs. Gonzalez?
Yes.
Mr. Medina?
Yes.
Mrs. Mendoza?
Yes.
Mrs. Quintana?
Yes.
Mr. Rodriguez?
Yes.
Mrs. Searles?
Yes.
Motion passes. Next agenda item is
going D. Discussion regarding resolution.
Wait, there's still the TA resolution. We need to give guidance to Steve. And in regards to that, it's we need to tell TA some of the stuff that we've told in the past, that the structure of the system is completely broken, and the structure, the system, and then looking at, you know, not just high stakes testing, but they're not addressing the problem. We got a letter from the commissioner, and pretty much what he's telling is our corrective action plan to others. You know, instead of really addressing the issue, he's just trying to pretty much say, hey, I told you guys, so that way when it comes later on, he could pretty much say, you know what, I told them they shouldn't be doing that. And so, I don't know, some type of guidance for Steve on that.
Okay, we just need to know generally what you all want to include in a resolution addressing the TEA on that issue. I don't know what the board desires.
I've got plenty of suggestions, but the number one thing is that they should have done what we had asked them in the past, and that is that they should start looking at having all the districts do an evaluation of themselves, do an audit of themselves. They have a new, you know, it doesn't bode well for TEA and the commissioner that the people, that the person that they hired to head the complaint section just quit on them for no apparent reason, at least from what I saw in the newspaper. There was no apparent reason for it, other than she probably doesn't feel that where that office is going, or they're not funding it adequately. I can think of plenty of things to tell them. One thing is, I think they still ought to go back and find out, ask each district to do an audit of what was going on. I think the feds may be coming down and doing some other districts. I don't know.
Well, I mean, if you look at this, it's not on his failings or the department's failings on what happened at EPISD. It's bringing the issue to light and showing that it's happening across. I mean, we need to make sure we were the first ones to say that the state needs to be audited, not on the failings that happened at EPISD, but on their failings to actually show that this is a systematic problem. And now he's just sending out a letter to say, hey, you know, I'm trying to cover my, just in case if something does happen, then I got wrong, I told him not to do it. But it's still happening. I mean, if they were to look at the data, and that's the concerning part, because you know these individuals that probably wanted to take over said, you know, this problem is bigger than, you know, and they're still trying to cover it. The structure, which the internal auditor reports directly to the commissioner, is the same thing he got on DPISD. I mean, let's be honest, this isn't about what's doing what's right for kids. It's about privatizing public ed and seeing how they can make profit off of public education. I mean, the high stakes testing has been a systematic approach to do that, and now they have, the power as the commissioner to appoint a board of managers to implement whatever policies they feel is, you know, ideology, and, you know, it's about the ideology and not in the best interest of kids. So there has to be accountability to the commissioner, to the state board, and so we have to draft up a letter renewing our push, you know, that we've said.
Do you want a letter or do you want a resolution?
Madam Chair, all the commissioner's doing when he put out his little deal in the paper, it was last week or 2 weeks ago, is basically saying, I'm telling all the districts, here you go, Ms. Board President and the superintendents, you know, this district over in, you know, these districts that we looked at into, they're doing this, we don't want you to do that. And I'm just letting you know, forewarned.
There's no accountability.
I mean, I don't get it. You know, is that he don't want to do it? They're not going to do it, and either they're not getting funded, or there's some more serious problems in that office than we ever forethought that was happening.
And that's probably all three.
It's probably all of them.
Madam Chair, I have a
question.
You know, we spent an incredible amount of time, people, power, effort to get our business right, and we, you know, did it on our own. But you would think that if he's going to make those kind of statements, that he might give us a little credit that Kenya Teo did it right, and we can use that as a template and what their corrective action plan equaled could be a template for the rest of the state. We're right here on the front line, getting the lion's share, you know, English language learners. And we did it right, and they approved it, and ours was good. I think that maybe somewhere in our letter resolution, it should be noted that, I mean, you'd think he'd be right here in front of us saying, you know, good job, y'all took the high ground. You did it right, thanks. We haven't heard one thing, nothing that said, you know, you did a good job, and thanks to your employees, you made everything right, and thank you to your administration. It was carried out. It wasn't just, sure, we'll do that and never hear from you again. I think that, you know, somehow that should be portrayed in our letter and resolution that we did do it right.
Thank you, Ms. Rose.
Okay. I can bring it back at the next meeting.
Yes. What I'd like to do is, the board's approval is, I'm going to be in Austin the second week in April. I'd like to draft a letter on behalf of myself and the board addressing this directly to Commissioner Williams. And I'd like to drop it into personally to his office. So that way it's a direct contact, Commissioner, that of our stance, of our position, to let him know that all of the is right. So with your approval, got the letter on top of the resolution, deliberate the commissioner myself. You know, I want to be strong with the commissioner and tell him he needs to do this right. You know? He needs to stop playing politics. But, you know, that's up to what's going on. It's just frustrating because it's obvious that, I mean, what happened at NPISD was something that they orchestrated, and their threat was to come after us next, and they couldn't do it. And we pretty much, we know his insight. I mean, and we have to expose it, you know? So.
I agree.
Could we just get a motion to approve that and then have maybe the officer look at it, be okay with it, and then get with that?
Resolution has to be reviewed by the board and sent to the board.
Okay, what about the letter? Because the letter's in a couple.
We can work on the letter, that's fine.
The next meeting.
Well, the resolution would be the next meeting. The letter can go with the letter to draft if you all approve it.
So I move to approve the TASB resolution.
We don't have it yet. We're going to
bring that. I thought that was just in our
model. We just did the TASB.
Okay, we voted on that. Then I move to approve preparation, our legal counsel preparing a document plus a resolution regarding the TEA audit process and high stakes testing practice.
Second.
We have a motion and a second, Ms. Gomez. Mr. Guadalajara?
Yes.
Mrs. Gonzalez?
Yes.
Mr. Medina?
Yes.
Mrs. Mendoza?
Yes.
Mrs. Quintana?
Yes.
Mr. Rodriguez?
Yes.
Mrs. Soros?
Yes.
Next agenda item, please. D, discussion regarding resolution to address preservation and maintenance of the Don Juan de Onate Trail. Mrs. Soros?
Yes. This was presented at the Facilities, Finance, and Audit Committee meeting, and I don't think we have a copy of it, but the committee was very pleased with it.
I can respond.
Okay, sure. I can read it. Thank you. With your permission?
Yes, ma'am. Absolutely.
Resolution of the Board of Trustees of the Canyon View Independent School District regarding the historic Don Juan de Onate Trail. Whereas the city of Canyon View has a rich heritage of traditional Southwest agrarian lifestyles, and whereas in recent years Canyon View has developed into a suburban community offering a quiet, peaceful, and safe atmosphere, and whereas a valuable part of the Canyon View community includes the historic significance of certain areas, including that portion of the Don Juan de Onate Trail that proceeds through Canyon View. And whereas the Board of Trustees wishes to protect and preserve the suburban and historic character of Canyon View, and to assure that future development within the boundaries of Canyon View ISD does not adversely impact the suburban character of the Canyon View community. Now, therefore, be it resolved by the Board of Trustees of the Canyon View Independent School District, City of El Paso, El Paso County, Texas, that the matters and facts stated in the preamble hereof are found and determined to be true and correct, and are established as the policy of the Canyon View Independent School District with regard to development, land use regulation, and the preservation of historic portions of the Don Juan de Onate Trail within the boundaries of the Canyon View ISD. Two, that the Board of Trustees of the Canyon View Independent School District shall take a strong interest in and shall object to and seek to prevent development along the Don Juan de Onate Trail that will adversely impact the character and historic relevance of the trail within the Canyon View community. Three, the Superintendent of Education is directed and authorized to keep the Board of Trustees informed regarding developments and proposed rezoning along the Don Juan de Onate Trail, so that the Board of Trustees can take appropriate actions to protect the interests of the school district and attempt to avoid adverse effects from development, especially when the adverse effects involve threats to the character and historic relevance of the trail within the community. Four, the superintendent is to develop a method to monitor proposed rezoning and site plan development in the vicinity of the Don Juan de Onate Trail, and to inform the Board of Trustees of the same sufficiently in advance so that the board may take appropriate action regarding the same. Resolved, passed, and adopted this day.
Any discussion, any questions from anybody?
approve.
Second.
We have a motion and a second, Ms. Gomez.
Mr. Coronado?
Yes.
Mrs. Gonzalez?
Yes.
Mr. Medina?
Yes.
Mrs. Mendoza?
Yes.
Mrs. Quintana?
Yes.
Mr. Rodriguez?
Yes.
And Mrs. Searles?
Yes. And Madam Chair, I would like also if the administration could be directed to send this to, or actually take this to the entities, the other entities, and ask them to recognize it instead of just sending it to them, in our mail, and you know, throw it aside, that they get it in their hands, recognize it, and possibly agree to adopt it themselves as well.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you.
Ms. Gomez?
Six reports. A food and nutrition services report.
We didn't vote.
We did.
Yes.
They voted,
right?
We did.
Yeah, we did. Yeah,
we did.
The motion is second.
Okay. I did, right?
Yes.
I thought I was losing that.
Good evening, President Quintana, members of the board, Dr. Galaviz. Today I'm here to present to you about food and nutrition report summary. I'm going to be reporting on quality and satisfaction survey, Texas Department of Agriculture audit, current and future projects, and the meal provision status. You know, the surveys and audits are great. It helps us evaluate how we're doing in the program and enhance what we're doing. The advisory committee met in November, and we went over the survey, last year's survey, and then we put together a new survey this year. The survey was conducted January 27 to February 7. It was an online survey through SurveyMonkey. It was categorized by grade level. Unlike last year, it was a whole. And what we wanted to do was focus on evaluations by grade level. The survey objectives was menu option satisfaction, customer service, dining environments, and participation rates. The next slide, it shows us the 2012-2013 results. And the next slide shows us the 2013-2014. I mean, we did really good. Elementary schools at 95% were, the question was cafeteria staff, are they helpful and caring, so that the students would understand the question. Middle schools at 81% and 91% responded that they liked most of the food. In Canotillo High School, 79% responded satisfactory and or excellent customer service. And 75% responded to satisfactory and excellent environment. Okay. Okay. Let's go back to the prior slide. Canotillo High School, the participation was at 43%, and Northwest College at 46%, middle schools at 71%, and elementary at 92%. We had a lot more participation this year than last year. If you look at our next slide, what we looked at was what were the preferred foods in all grade levels? And what we looked at, when we looked at this chart, it was like fast food type foods. So this is indicative that students still think of preferred meals as fast food type meals. Okay. Following the survey, we met again, the advisory committee, and this is the recommendations that they provided. I want to point out a few things. I know you have the package for your review. Develop information tips for motivating students to try different foods. Participate in food fair during open house, which we already do. Display food brand labels, and that was, you know, as we discussed it in the meeting, they said that that was probably something that we should do, as we do provide quality food in our schools. The middle schools is continue providing optional menus. They're a hit, the sandwiches and the salads. provide more options for the grab-and-go and add flavored oatmeal. Northwest Early College, again, they like the salads and salad sandwiches. In Canotillo High School is to rearrange all menus to realign favorite menus to provide a balance and keep the multiple offerings. And again, in your package, you'll see more information. The menus are in the back of your package for your review to see, you know, we printed for you from September to May. You already have an idea. The advisory committee, it's made up of 15 members, parent liaisons, parents, cafeteria managers, and food services staff. Meetings were held in September, November, and February, and we're going to meet again in April to prepare for next year's menus, to look at what we need to change to enhance our current practices. Quality and satisfaction survey, meal service evaluation. We asked ourselves during our committee meetings, do we have quality of foods? And one of your pages in your packet shows the name brands that are very familiar to all of us. You know that we do serve name brand foods. And then I asked, why are the students in some of the survey regions say, why don't they like the food? Well, we looked prior that they still like fast food type foods. It's not that they don't like the food, it's that they prefer a fast food type food. Because of the dietary specifications that we have to comply with, we are not able to just give a fast food type food. Waste factors. I asked again, what contributes to waste? As you know, in our schools, we have offer versus serve. We offer a variety of menu items, and then we let the children choose what they want to eat. And the reason for that is that we believe that if the children pick an item, that it's because they want to eat it. So that's why we provide optional items. Are we providing a pleasant and dial meal environment? Food services provides an annual in-service training to do a customer service training. But this year, we're going to do an additional training, and we're going to invite guest speakers, okay? So I think that will help, instead of me presenting and training, I think that bringing in new speakers will help. The next report I have is the Food and Nutrition Services Report Audit. The audit was conducted in February 25th and 26th. The audit scope was overall operations of program, accounting and claiming, meal patterns, compliance, after-school programs, financials, and food and safety sanitation. We started since last year, you know, training. We have tons of new regulations to comply with. And then we got our menu certified, which added an additional 6 cents reimbursement. Which gives us additional funding. And then this year, it was all about keeping records, because if it's not in records, we didn't do it. The two campuses that were reviewed was Northwest Early College High School and Devonport Elementary. These two campuses, they represented the whole district, the whole practices of our operation. We only picked two campuses, but it represents the whole, you know, all the campuses. The final report was no findings notice, classified as an excellent audit. And I got the quote from the audit report, and the quote stated, I want to compliment the Canotillo ISD child nutrition staff. It is apparent that they are dedicated to providing excellent service to the students that they serve. The staff at the sites reviewed are efficient, friendly to all the students. The variety of meals at the sites were appealing, fresh, and tasteful. The reason why she says appealing, fresh, and tasteful is because we had lunch at the campuses. And I gave her a tour of our practices. I showed her how our raw foods look like our carrots, you know. And so she was very impressed with that, because a lot of districts, what they do is they process their food. You know, they buy cut carrots or they buy cut lettuce. And what we do is we buy it raw and we process it. It can be fresher when we serve. So that's the audit. The next report is current and future projects. Earlier I discussed about menu development. Evaluations are always about enhancing our current menus or practices. We have an established Food and Nutrition Advisory Committee. They have been very, very helpful in coming in and have, you know, providing information to us about what's going on in the schools. I mean, the liaisons and the parents that are so involved, they have been very, very helpful. The purchase of equipment for operations, what we're doing is, since last year, is we're evaluating the needs of the district and using our excess funding to buy and update equipment. Last year, we bought three campuses, Jose Damian, Bill Childress, and Canopio Elementary, different pieces of equipment. And for this year, I started investing a little bit in human capital because our employees are so important to us. They represent us out there. One of the things that we developed is academies, and we brought in in specialized areas, like Cook Academy, Cashier's Academy, and we've met three times this year, and we share ideas of how to do things better. And this is a good way to value their knowledge. Then the Texas Department of Agriculture is all year long, starting last year, and then this year is always preparing ourselves for it to be rated, audit rated. During future projects for next year, we have Canotillo Elementary, a serving line that we've identified as a need, and then Devonport cafeteria tables and a dishwasher. Reyes Elementary and Northwest Early College Schools, and we've identified funding for all the projects involved, and we do have current funding for those projects. The next presentation is about the meal provision status. Today, I'm here to provide the board preliminary information on current status of provision to an information of new national school lunch program. It's called the Community Eligibility Provision. Working with past data, when Provision 2 was established in this district was 92-93, and I'm trying to gather that information so that we can establish our standing, our status currently. Provision 2 has to be renewed every 4 years, and this year is a renewal year. So it's hitting me hard. It's hitting me hard because, you know, the audit, the applications, and, you know, so forth. But, you know, do it. What we use to measure the socioeconomic growth is unemployment rates, poverty rates. And I just talked to, I just talked this morning to a regional census bureau of department in Colorado, and she trained me to how to download all that data. And then the school district officials have provided me with the data in the district to identify the students. Okay.
Ida, one question. Under Provision 2, what is your expectation of qualifying for another 4 years?
Well, in looking at the numbers, okay, the direct certification, and I wanted to explain to it in the next slide, so that's okay. But let's go to the next slide, this one. This one, at this point, I'd like to point out a correction to the economic growth. This slide, what represented was just a difference of the past base year free meal percentage to the current free meal percentage as direct certified by the records that were provided to me. I will have to come back and report on that economic growth. Okay, let me go to the next one. Okay, good question. This meal provision status is very much like Provision 2. The difference is that meal provision status, this one, community eligibility provision status, does not use applications and develop a base year. It is conducted by certifying students through federal programs through free K eligibility, migrant, and homeless. And as you can see in the blue part, it defines what identified students are. And we have to be at least in a minimal level of 40%, okay? If we do go with this eligibility program, we have to agree that we're gonna serve breakfast and lunch to all students for the 4 successive years, till 2017-2018. The district may implement CEP in one school, group of schools, or district-wide. There's no base year applications, unlike, you know, Provision 2, we had to do that. And new schools, because the question I know is going to come up about Sylvester Reyes, new schools may participate if the school meets eligibility requirements and the number of identified students and total enrollment is available before the counting and claiming of the meals. So it's got to be before, okay? The next slide is about tracking eligibility rates. It's just that it's just telling us that we can track them at any time. If it's higher, the eligibility rate, we can claim that eligibility rate. If it's lower, we can stay with that 4 year, that first year that we got that eligibility rate. How can we participate in the school districts and participate by individual schools, by group, or by district? Okay, and there's more for your reading in there. Okay, and let's look at this chart. This is, they don't have this chart, but it's in your packet, this chart. Okay, the meal reimbursement with community eligibility. In this chart, what it's telling us is they say we identify so many students at 40%, for example, then we add a multiplier at 1.6, and that gives us our percentage of free. What the readings tell me is that they applied at 1.6 is because they're eliminating that reduced rate. You know, because we had free and reduced, they're eliminating the reduced rate, and they have come up with data that says that 6 out of 10 students are usually eligible through applications. So that's why they added that eligibility. This chart, once I identified the students by running reports through the Texas Department of Agriculture and getting information from Margarita Mendez, the PIMS clerk, we were able to determine that we were going to be at 51.14. Well, at this point when I ran this report, it was just migrant, and then they were able to provide me more reports, so we're currently at 53.2%, which leads us to with a multiplier at 85.11%. And our current rate right now in provision to 93%. So as you can see, it's lower. It is lower than our current 93% of free reduced meals. So what is the timeline? Well, in March 19, I identified, I did the direct certification of migrant students. And then I had to submit a report to the Texas Department of Agriculture with, you know, this report that you saw. And then I'm looking forward to attending training on this provision at Region 19. By May 1st, the Texas Department of Agriculture will publish a list of eligible school districts. And in June 30th, by June 30th, that's the last day to submit application. Before this time, I mean, before we submit applications, what I would like to do is come to the board again and present to you the current economic growth of the district and see what is a better option for the district to go with. Is it better to go with provision 2, or is it better to apply for the new meal provision program? It's just going to depend on the economic growth. I can use two areas. I can use unemployment rates in the area and poverty rates, and that's what I'm going to look at and bring back to the board to present to you. And at that point, I can make a recommendation after we evaluate it, Martha, and then the district can make a decision of what's the best provision to apply for. And it's always about what's going to give us more benefit for the district. Okay? I think that concludes my presentation.
Any questions?
I have a question. Sorry. You mentioned the committee members, 15 committee members. Would you please, what are the members? Who are the members? You said parent liaisons, who else?
Parent liaisons, parents, and cafeteria managers, and cafeteria staff.
You don't have any students in there?
No students. The only thing we've done last year and we did this year is we go out to the schools and talk to the students. It's hard to bring them into the meetings because of, schedules. I have asked the parents, because we do have a few parents in the committee, and they feel that they represent the student. Because it's during the day. I also asked them if we could have meetings after hours, and they don't want to participate after hours. They want to go home. And that's the reason why, we keep the schedule.
You give us that opportunity of asking students or clients how they think of the cafeteria service. So we'll work with the principals to do a.
We conducted a survey in January. However, perhaps creating small committees that the principals select at the campus level would be the next step.
School, getting the students input. That's a wonderful suggestion. Definitely do that.
That would be, if the board agrees, that would be my recommendation. Because, I mean, the parents here, they're there not on a day-to-day basis, but of course they get to hear from the students, their kids. I get to hear from mine, and he's not happy. But I would love...
We'll work for that and bring back a report before the hearings.
Please.
We're down to 2 months, so please.
Thank you.
Mr. Corona.
The survey for the elementaries, was it also done online?
Yes, it was online.
All of them?
Mm-hmm. What we did, we sent out, well, I sent it out to Gustavo, and Gustavo sent it out to the principals, the link, and then the principals administered through, you know, teachers or programs. Mm-hmm.
And it's done during the
During school studies.
Okay. And is it during class time?
I'm not sure.
Each principal was allowed to select the time frame that they wanted to conduct. I don't know exactly at what point, but we could certainly find that out and provide it in a Thursday package.
Because we had good participation at the lower campuses, but the high school in Northwest Early, I'm really disappointed in the less than 50% of the turnout.
That's and we gave them updates through the process of the survey.
Right.
You know, the percentages, we would send out emails and give them mm-hmm. updates to help with the participation.
Okay.
We'll get that information, and perhaps we can designate a different time frame.
If there's some way we can get some kind of incentive for them to do the survey. I mean, I'd like to see a higher participation from the, at least, you know, two-thirds to three-quarter. You know, I can understand why maybe the seniors aren't going to want to participate, but...
So we can get them more active.
But yeah, but at least the, you know, freshmen, sophomores, and juniors, that at least... You know, we want to go after all of them, but I can see why the seniors may not want to participate in the survey. But. Okay.
Any other questions?
I have one. Mr. I just want to make sure that, Ms. Ikeda, what I'm hearing is what I'm hearing, that we will sign up for 4 more years and we will have a universal grade.
What we're doing right now is researching which one is our best option. Is it Provision 2 or the Community Eligibility Program, which is the federal government just released with a Title I
I understand.
This new year, this in January. So we're going to look at our numbers and see which one is our best fit, come to the board, present for approval and direction to move forward.
And I saw June was
That's the drop-dead date. My goal is to get that in by May so that we have sufficient time to get a response because we need to be ready for Plan B if we don't have approval by July 1st.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Mr. Coronado.
And Dr. Galaviz, we're still doing a general survey this year like we've done in past years. I don't know if you... No, not the TASB, the one that the school district did. It was done 2 years ago.
Annette?
The school effective survey.
Huh?
It's the school effective survey. Is it the school effective survey?
No, it's district wide in terms, and it covers everything from.
We usually do it that, like the last 2 weeks of school.
Are we doing it this year? I'd like to see an expanded. I know we requested this 2 years ago. It didn't get done last year, obviously. But
what we can do is we can get you the survey, what it looked like. I can put it in the packet.
Great.
Then you could give me some input. How's that?
That sounds great. Before it goes
out. Overall operations, correct?
Yes.
It has a little bit about safety. It has a little bit about the food. It has a little bit about. Campus.
Right, not only that, and it was done from teachers, of parents, yes. Of students.
Yes, it was three different groups of people.
Yeah. Okay.
That's it. Thank you, Mr. Coronado.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
agenda item.
7, consent agenda.
Madam Chair.
Mr. Medina.
I'd like to pull item V for this session.
D?
V is in Victor.
V is in Victor. Okay, anybody else?
Yes, ma'am. I would like to pull A, 4, and L, and Q.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you.
Anybody else?
M and L.
M-N-O.
M-N-O.
Not M-N-O.
M-N-N-O.
M-N-N-O. What's left?
It's M-N-N-O.
What was yours?
V. V is in Victor.
Victor.
Madam Chair, I'd also like to pull A5.
A5. Okay, does anybody want to make a motion to approve?
We actually need an administrative recommendation to approve the consent agenda with the exception of
with the exception, yes. Of B, A4, A5, L, Q, M, N, and O.
So move.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Ms. Gomez.
Mr. Coronado?
Yes.
Mrs. Gonzalez?
Yes.
Mr. Medina?
Yes.
Mrs. Mendoza?
Yes.
Mrs. Quintana?
Yes.
Mr. Rodriguez?
Yes.
And Mrs. Sill.
No, I forgot B. I'm so sorry. I didn't say it. And I've got a question.
B?
What?
I think he
did B. No, he did V.
He did Victory.
He did Victory. I want Boy.
So, yeah, actually, point of order, the motion's passed because there's enough affirmative votes. If you want to pull item B, you're going to need to reach a motion to reconsider the approval of item B. And once that's raised, yes. Seconded, and passed, you can pull it back.
So, I move to reconsider
the approval of item B.
Second.
Point of order, I don't think you can, but
she
I will.
Make
you can't make the motion, Lori, but I will.
Okay.
Not second the motion.
We have a motion and a second.
Yes. Mr. Coronado?
Yes.
Mrs. Gonzalez?
Yes.
Mr. Medina?
Yes.
Mrs. Mendoza?
Yes.
Mrs. Quintana?
Yes.
Mr. Rodriguez?
Yes.
And Mrs. Stern?
Yes. I'm sorry, and thank you.
Okay, Mr. Medina, is that first one
with you? Oh, V. Oh, righty. This item, approval of summer school compensation for certified personnel and summer school compensations for aides and paraprofessionals. I guess I'm a little confused.
This
here.
Is the item that we discussed during our committee meeting, and these are the two items, the paraprofessional.
This is the raise to $2,350, correct?
Yes, the one from $2,350 to $35, mm-hmm. And then for the clerical and paraprofessional, okay. Instead of the $850, it's going to be whatever the regular pay is, the current pay is.
The reason I pulled this item was just to make a note that we were raising this compensation for summer school.
Yes, sir.
So, with that, I wanted to make sure that I was understanding this. And more than not, I know this is not the summer school administrators.
No, sir.
These are the aides, instructional aides, and
the clerical and the paraprofessional aides. Yes, and it's also for the certified staff. Any certified staff working.
So teachers.
Teachers, nurses. From the $20
through $50
to
$35.
They'll
be paid
$35. Yes, sir.
Okay. That's all I need to thank you. With that, a motion to motion to approve Approval of summer school compensation for certified personnel and summer school compensation. Changes for aides and paraprofessionals.
Thank you. We have a motion and a second. Ms. Gomez.
Mr. Coronado is left. Mrs. Gonzalez?
Yes.
Mr. Medina?
Yes.
Mrs. Mendoza?
Yes.
Mrs. Quintana?
Yes.
Mr. Rodriguez?
Yes.
Mrs. Serra?
Yes.
Motion passes.
Mr. Coronado will be back shortly.
Ms. Searles, we're going to start with A4.
Yes. My question on A4 is from the warrant list that was approved on this date. We were given answers to check number 126131. The question was on the middle school. The answer was on the high school. And so it didn't answer the question at all. And the question was, why was our water up? Why did we have an increase in water at the middle school again? We've had a bad leak there. Prices have been down, and all of a sudden, we see a spike.
And just to clarify, this was as a result. We provided the utility consumptions during for this month's report, and that was the same issue that was noted in the January warrant. So the CMS-CHS distinction was from the January warrant report.
Yes.
Right.
Mrs. Searles, to answer the question why the reasoning for the spike in the water consumption at those schools, we don't have an answer for you at this time regarding that. We have a plumber that is looking at that issue as we currently speak. We created a work order for that in order for him to go out and investigate exactly what the issue is. We don't have a response for you yet, but we will have that shortly. In addition to that, I'd like to mention that we are doing a comprehensive analysis of reviewing all of the information that Mrs. Aguirre has collected over the past years in order to compile a visual graph that will help you and all of us understand the utility consumptions per campus for electricity, water, gas, and all the utilities in order for us to identify things such as this in the future and be able to get to them on a monthly basis a lot more quickly. So we are going to be providing that to you to help address this issue in
your
the future.
Your proactive stance is appreciated, but I've got this from February the 20th, an update. The answer wasn't answered, and I know that maybe you don't realize this, so I sort of think you do. We had a significant water leak at the middle school, and it cost us a lot of money, and I'm seeing that happen again. So every day you don't check it since February the 20th, we're losing money. It's just like pouring it out in the street. We got our electric checked. Our water is also tied to our JCI contract, that our water consumption has got to be down.
Yes, ma'am.
Or we're not going to realize the savings, and we're going to be in a significant shipwreck.
Yes, ma'am, I understand.
So I don't understand why when that was asking back in January, why didn't somebody jump to it and say, gee, we had a huge leak, you know, maybe it's leaking again, these are old pipes. So I'd like to feel comforted that in the board that our money's being well stewarded and somebody's looking at that.
Yes, ma'am, I understand. And I do understand that there was a leak that was discovered right before I arrived in July, and that was fixed, and it was with your help that it was discovered. And that issue has now arisen once again. I was notified of this particular water leak from you to Mrs. Aguirre last week, of this issue. And so we've taken that approach now to get a real formative answer to you. Like I had mentioned, we do have a plumber looking at it now. There's a work order created. As far as from February, I don't have a response for you.
Yeah, I really personally expect for things to be when it's such a no-brainer. I mean,
yes, ma'am. I personally do not recall back in February that it was brought to my attention, but
I've got the written answer here. It was brought to your attention, and what you answered was an answer for the high school.
Oh, okay.
But what was asked was about the middle school.
Okay.
So I see no attention being targeted to the question or the issue.
We'll take a look at it again. We've got a work order generated for it. We'll get a response to you tomorrow in the weekly notables.
Thank you very much.
Yes, ma'am.
That takes away money from students.
No, I understand. I agree with you.
Thank you.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Next one was the...
Well, are you going to approve A4?
I move to approve A4, the minutes. No.
You have an address.
This is B.
Oh,
that was
sorry.
B.
Yeah. I have A4, but material.
That was B. I mean, that was A4. It wasn't B. I didn't get to B, but it's essentially the same thing.
Wait, was it A4?
Yeah,
it was A4.
It was relating to the minutes.
Okay. It was to the old minutes.
Okay.
So it was A4.
It is A4.
And
it
B?
Is A4.
Yeah, are you going to approve them?
Yes.
We're going to have to.
Is it A4 and B, though?
No. B.
No, it's not
separate.
B yet.
No, B was pulled separately.
Okay.
But A4 and 5 were.
No, but A5, is my understanding, A5, and this is because I spoke to Ms. Gomez earlier today and to President Quintana earlier this week. A5, the minutes need to be corrected for February the 24th. It's my understanding those the desire of the board would be tabled if they're incorrect. I know they're incorrect because I've read them.
Oh, we could just correct them and then just...
You can't, the language is rather wordy to do so.
So,
I then move to postpone the approval of the minutes from February the 18th, 2014.
Second.
And
A5, the February 24th, 2014 minutes to also be postponed.
Can I just ask on A14 since we're on it?
14. A4.
It's only four.
I mean A4, 2014, sorry, February 18th, 2014. On the regular monthly board meeting, we did have discussion. So we had discussion on the actual for board meetings to discuss what date. Can we put that on the next agenda? I thought it was going to be on this item. I mean, on this agenda, we did get a report from administration as to other districts that have the monthly board meetings, so that way we could start with these
coordinates.
Yeah. Which was E, back down 6E. And the good thing is we now have our new governmental affairs director, so we can work on item 6 C and D from the notes. So we could put them on the next meeting to discuss that and see when we could have monthly board meetings.
I'll second Ms. Searle's motion to postpone.
We have a motion and a second.
Mr. Corona?
Yes.
Mrs. Gonzalez?
Yes.
Mr. Medina?
Yes.
Mrs. Mendoza?
Yes.
Mrs. Quintana?
Yes.
Mr. Rodriguez?
Yes.
Mrs. Searles?
Yes.
Okay, Mr. Searles?
Yes, now it's B, this month's warrant list.
Yes.
And I'd like to once again go to our utilities. They are up huge. Electric is up $30,000 in January of this year from January of last year. That check we just got today from school, it's because everything was down. And I have a concern when I see a difference in 1 month, just 1 month from year to year, that we're using $30,000 more. It's not summertime, there's no air conditioners on. I don't understand what's going on. And back to, we're fiscally responsible to understand what's going on due to our contract with Johnson Controls and due to, you know, our responsibility to our district and our children. So I would really like to know why our utilities, all of them, gas, water, electric, they're all increased. The water, though, once again, I'm thinking there's possibly another leak.
Ms. Jones, we'll provide you with a comprehensive study of understanding the utilities.
It's not so much a comprehensive study. We've been seeing it for years. I want to know the answer.
Yes, ma'am.
Why are they up? Not a comprehensive study, just an answer. Why is the electric bill 30,000 higher one January to the next? If it were in my home and I got a bill this January that said it was $100 and last year it was only 30, I want to know what I left on.
I agree. Yes, ma'am.
And that's a huge increase. $30,000 is a, you know, and so what I'd like is an answer. Why are these going up? Not a comprehensive study, please.
Yes, ma'am. We'll get that for you.
Thank you. And thank you, Madam Chair. With that, I move to approve the attendance, financial, and warrant list in the amount of $1,099,921.22.
I'll second the motion.
We have a motion and a second, Ms. Smith.
Mr. Guadagnado?
Yes.
Mrs. Gonzalez?
Yes.
Mr. Medina?
Yes.
Mrs. Mendoza?
Yes.
Mrs. Quintana?
Yes.
Mr. Rodriguez?
Yes.
And Mrs. Sir?
Yes. Yes, I did. I have L. There was discussion at the finance meeting about L that maybe Dr. Galvez would like to take over on this one.
Yes, ma'am. I think that's when we're discussing the FES.
Yes, sir.
To do our recommendation is postpone to the facility. The recommendation was that the fence were at one point, but more beneath this year in the surveillance.
That was, I believe, the gist of what the committee came to, that the high school was unfenced and it was very vulnerable.
The other questions that we had was the fact that we only had one vendor who presented to the committee and no other options. So that was a major concern. So we asked, why was that the case?
And I believe what the committee came to consensus on was that the money would be better spent fencing the high school immediately and looking forward to getting another vendor, some more...
To come up with a better analysis of it.
And come back with that so that we could budget for next year. Yes,
Mr. Medina.
Where are these funds coming from to pay for this video surveillance?
It's part of the, you recall, the 2006 bond funds. There was $200,000 that were allocated.
But that was meant to be for fencing.
The way it's titled, it says security cameras. However, in the past discussion last year of security,
it was moved to video surveillance.
Yes, that is correct.
I still have yet to see a comprehensive security program, and the fence was always something that you get earmarked at $200,000 for. So, okay, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mm-hmm.
Well, I guess then that we would move in, Mr. Blanco, move in the positive for this, or
it's up to the board if you all want to approve it.
Well, no, I don't mean to approve it, but the motion has to be positive, so.
You can table.
Okay, so just postpone it. Then I move to postpone this L, the approval of the contract for video surveillance project, until further notice.
We would like to present an option to you if we could, if we had just a minute of your time.
I think it's a concern of the program or the video. I think it's the funds should be spent in a different direction.
Right, we understand that. We'd like to present a different finding. We have that we still have enough money for the fencing and present the first phase one and phase two of the camera solution, if you would like to hear it.
Court?
I would.
You want to hear it?
I mean, that doesn't hurt.
Doesn't hurt?
Yeah. Okay.
Let me start with how we put this project together. There's a group of people, there's HR, that is what we consider in project management the stakeholder, right? It's the one providing the funds. And IT is working more as a technological integrator, right? When we did the scope analysis on this, we find that time was a constraint, right? And money was another one. So time was fixed, we needed to provide a solution by December, and at the same time, we only had $200,000 to implement this solution. So what we did is we cut the scope, and we said, let's start with phases. What we wanna do is integrate the cameras that we have here existing in the building, in central office, and then cover the areas that other departments are trying to, where they're trying to install cameras, which is the warehouse and the food service area. And then do that into a system that is already integrated. We went and visited different school districts, and we found that the common denominator on the software is the one that we're proposing. We don't know the software, really. You know, it's the first time we do a system like this, but we think that selecting the best software and the one that is most installed in the area is the one that gives the less risk of an unsuccessful installation. Now, to reduce the risk too, what we need to do is to reduce the scope. Instead of going and implementing this in the entire district, why don't we start with just central office? We have the best software, just a small portion of it installed. We'll have time to work on it and see if it's a solution that we can deploy to the rest of the campuses. That solution was presented to you. I don't know if you have that copy as option one. And that means it's just implementing the hardware to support that camera. And the total on that is $21,000.
I have a couple of questions.
Mr. Rodriguez, please.
The $21,000 you're saying, is that for hardware, or is that for the actual, the actual infrastructure when it comes to wiring them?
Is it wiring? It's new cameras, and it's also the licensing for the software. And the hardware to connect.
So what is the best software? I mean, and how did you come to that?
Yeah, well, we visited these two campuses, district, right? We went and visited, it was Atleta and Paso ISD. Both of them had the same software installed.
Who was that software?
It's called ONSSI, Ocularis. Yeah, it's very common. I think Head Start just select the same product for the video camera services, right? So, like I said, going back to the scope thing, we didn't know a lot about the software, right? This is the first time we installed something like this. So, putting my hat as a network manager or IT director, what's important for me is to make sure that whatever software you install in this network is a software that we can support, and that is not going to affect the delivery of instruction, which is why the network is here, right? Any other product out there that is, you know, not as enterprise level will for sure affect the network. So we said, let's go with what's best, and let's find a company that can support this software. And that's a decision for one company.
Mr. Flores, I don't think the concern is the software. And I'm sure this is a great system. But when you're building a house, you start from a foundation. But the, you know, the base, the walls, the roof. The fencing in any security is number one. When we talk about cameras and it being part of an integrated, comprehensive security program, this is part of it. I agree, this is part of it. But what we need right now is not something like this, in my personal view. I don't speak for the board. What I see currently is the need to have the high school fenced in. This is great, but what's going to prevent somebody from grabbing a camera when there's no fence around it?
Yeah.
That's where my thoughts are.
And see, as the project manager on this project, the scope of work was select a video camera solution, right?
Mm-hmm.
My scope was not to implement a
comprehensive
integrated solution. And I would look in different ways, right?
How old are the cameras currently that you're trying to integrate?
How old are they? The oldest ones are at the high school, and they were installed at the same time that the high school was built. And that's the oldest one.
So you're going to integrate 10-year-old cameras?
According to this computer system, or management system, they've told us and been confirmed through EPISD and YISD that we can integrate any camera on it. It'll pick up any camera, and we can use that. And if I may, Mr. Medina, also to answer your question about the fencing, Mr. Padilla back there told me yesterday that the fencing quote that he received was $130,000. That would leave him about $70,000.
I'd still love to see the quotes personally. More than anything, what we've been asking for, Mr. Gonzalez, I hold you personally responsible for this, over a year now that we've been asking for that security fencing. And the high school, we've purchased new equipment, we put down a new field, we have great stuff for our ag, and we're not protecting any of that. The development continues to grow. As Mr. Coronado was very quick to say, the kids are leaving school, going to the ditch behind the school, and doing stuff. Yes. Now, if there was a fence, they wouldn't be doing that stuff. So I think what you're not listening to is the fact that we want the fence. Wasn't anything.
I do understand that, sir. And just as soon as we left, as soon as I left the podium the last meeting, I started working on that. Mm-hmm. And that's just where we came up with the quotes now. There aren't firm for other quotes that Mr. Padilla has, I understand, and I apologize for misunderstanding my previous. And believe me, it has been in the works right now, and the fence is the top priority. But we're hoping that the second step in a security system or a secure campus is, number one, you do the perimeter, as you're correct. But then number two, you provide some type of surveillance or some type of security guards.
Correct.
And providing a surveillance cameras will make it, it's the least it's more cost effective than having people out there walking.
What I'm not seeing, though, and what this board is not seeing, is a comprehensive plan that covers every single one of our campuses. Not just starting off at the, I think we're starting off here and kind of playing with it. I don't want to play with anything. My daughter goes to this school. My wife works at these schools. I don't want to hear that we're playing with security at the head district offices. What I want to hear is that we're coming up with this top to bottom plan that starts from the feet up. That's really what we want to get.
And we do have a plan that's maybe a 3-year, 4-year plan. But for right now, what we're asking for is to provide us the infrastructure, which is the management system, and not spending more than that, because we do have, all we would need is encoders to bring the high school, Garcia, this campus, and all existing cameras that right now, all we would need is encoders to put them online with this management system.
And again, I guess, and I'll leave this point alone after this. 2 years ago, that attack happened in an elementary school. You're protecting middle schools and high schools. We have more elementary schools than anything else in this district. So I would hope that your security plan, comprehensive and integrated, would be presented to this board before pieces of the bigger plan were being presented. So, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Rodriguez.
The question I have, okay, regarding this system, right, that we're wanting, this is the concern I have. It's a non-private, right? In other words, it's not copyright, huh?
It's open, right?
It's open. It's an open system, and so any other system, correct? And so when you're looking at that and you're seeing what we're presented with, Plan B, that's just one vendor. This isn't a sole source type of contract, right? Other people could provide that same type of. Is that correct?
You may, right? And it was a discussion that we had is that if time is not a constraint, as it was identified at the beginning, then maybe going out and getting more vendors.
We should have been working on this long, and so My thing is here, you're providing the board pretty much with, and yeah, we're going through the cooperative, but we're not looking at what's in the maximum. And to me, it looks like a sole source contract. And that's a concern I have. I mean, you're providing one vendor to say, hey, here's $200,000, let's go with this person to go after an open system. If we had that scope of the work or looking at whatever that open system is, we should have provided to everybody else. Maybe that's in other cooperatives, like we've done and we're going to talk about later, so that way we could make a sound decision as a board. That's a concern I have.
Yeah, and you know what? I think there was a misconception of that those $200,000 going to one vendor. When we had that on phases, phase one and phase two, which is $20,000, $21,000, that's the only part that is going to the vendor. And the last part is buying the cameras. We can buy the cameras from whoever we want, right? But
I understand your point. Well, we can buy the other stuff, but we should have looked at the other. My thing is, yeah, we could have bought the cameras, but what was presented to the board was $196,000. So, I know we're in a time constraint. This is very critical, but we've been trying to work on this. And so, I mean, that's the concern I have when it's being presented to the board. So.
And, you know, from the technology point of view, like I said, is and I, just to explain my the way I thought to do this, time is a constraint. And I have a company that supports that software that is going to tap those cameras into my network, right, with a time constraint. Then I'm going to choose a company that knows my networks, right? Because I didn't want to go out and just get a quote from a company that says, I can do the same, and then start tapping video. Because video, as you say, video really consumes the network, right? We got erased out into the network, and if we start putting a system that we don't know or a vendor that says they can provide that, then our network can go down, right? So I said, the risk of getting a company that in this short period of time that doesn't know my network is too high. That was my dream of thought.
And I'm just saying it's over a comprehensive thing, but that's all I have for this.
Ms. Earls? Yes. I have a question. Ms. Aguirre, could you help me with this? How did we get from 200,000 to 250,000? The extra money come from
the 250,000 amount, as this item was presented to us at cabinet and discussing the needs and you know the infrastructure that may be needed, the discussion was there's only 200,000. Perhaps because it can be phased in, we can present as a priority for next year's budget, and that's where the additional funding would be brought to the board, you know, and with a listing of priorities, and then you either approve or deny.
So but that this was the amount idea. Is like a next year's budget
the
priority.
The 50,000 would have to be next year's priority.
Okay.
The only thing for secured is a 200,000 in the bottom.
Okay. Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Yes, sir.
My suggestion is that we ask our administration to bring back a proposal of the phase one, the exact what they want to do, and the quotes on the fencing. It's clear that we're not going to be able to put up the entire district-wide security in one shot. Not now, not next year, not in 2 years, until maybe we pass the next bond. Then we could probably put the rest of what's lacking. But whatever we have now with those 200,000, let's see what we can do. But let's get those two proposals together with the money we have now. We're right coming around the budget time this next month to see where we're looking at on the priorities and maybe the recapture money. Of course, we've already earmarked the recapture money to a lot of other stuff. But
just a little bit.
But let's see what we can do and bring back the quotes for the fencing. I think the board's saying it's a priority, but we also want to get started on this. And I think in terms of wherever we can, if possible, go out for vendors. And for the cameras, we'll be able to do that, but we're not buying cameras right now. So, and I agree, and with the software system, I think from what we've looked into when I went to both Isleta, EPISD, even Socorro, the Ocularis system is clearly the way to go. I think Isleta saved to the tune of $1.5 million over EPISD's implementation of the exact same thing, and we're able to get, you just have to see it. They have probably 10 to 20 times more monitoring than EPISD for 1/4
right.
of the expense. Am I wrong?
No, you're totally right.
So, and it's all thanks to the expert at YISD who was at Socorro, whose Socorro's trying to steal back from Isleta now. And he's willing to help us. And I think they've been over here already.
And they have the clear example of two different implementations, right? One
right.
done right on Isleta,
right.
like with a department. And then the other one with just the product was purchased. And it's not used. I mean,
yeah.
It's just like a, you know, a responsive system instead of predictive system.
What they did at EPISD is they went out and bought the system proprietary, is that correct?
Yeah.
That they did it instead of doing it open when in-house like Isleta did it and got and spent $2 million for 75% less.
Madam Chair.
Yes, sir.
I'm hearing two things. I'm hearing going out to bid by multiple vendors, and I'm hearing Ocularis is okay. That's what's proposed in the phase one, the Ocularis software, right?
Yeah.
So,
I mean,
yeah, and
we
if
can evaluate, right?
Yeah, and if the vendor here is if they're the only ones that can provide Ocularis, then great. If not, then you know I don't know if we have time to do that anymore. But
yeah, that's a good.
And that's the whole issue. If we do have time, great. If we don't, then we need to move on to phase one. But let's look at it in conjunction with doing the fencing, because I know the board is and if we can do the fencing and phase one starting with the Ocularis system. You know, and it might be a good idea that the board or more of the board members go to see the Isleta that have not seen the Isleta, so that this expert at Isleta can give you the background on it. I think it would be very helpful.
Okay. Yeah. I have a question, Madam Chair. So, what I'm hoping I'm hearing is that the wheels are going to be put in motion, and by the time we're sitting here next month, somebody's going to tell us there's a fence going up at the high school.
This has to come to us.
No, we don't have the quotes before us. Have we approved those?
No, we have not.
Are you sure the last time they came we didn't? Because I remember distinctly everybody going Valley Fence. That's the one. They're local.
But they're not a cooperative, so we have to go out.
No, they're not. But there was we had all of this at a meeting about a year ago.
In February of last year.
Yeah.
Madam Chair, I really think it's due diligence that we do
okay.
new quotes. With that long enough time period,
okay.
I think we need to do new ones.
Do it again?
Yeah.
So next month we'll have that?
That's what I suggest we do, that we bring both proposals, both their phase one and at the same meeting, so that we can see what funds are available and what the fence is going to be and what the phase one will be.
So we do another meeting.
We won't have time to do an RFP before the next board meeting. Go out and maybe get a couple of quotes on the co-op that we would not be able to offer them. It takes about at least 6 to 8 weeks to do an RFP, and that's bare minimum.
And we're talking about the surveillance system or the
fencing.
Fencing.
So we'll see it in May.
How long would it take, Ron, for a
for the fencing?
RFP?
We're looking at minimum 8 weeks.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'd rather do it right.
That's fine. All I need is a detailed scope.
I'm fine with it. As long as we can get the fencing done in the summer, I don't see any.
Yeah, there's
no
way.
Yeah, that it doesn't fall by the wayside again.
Right.
We're a year behind.
As long as we can do it in the summer, although there's going to be projects going on at the high school in the summer.
Yeah, but most of this is the perimeter, so.
Is that going to be that's not going to be a problem?
Do you agree, Dominic?
It won't interfere.
It won't interfere, Dominic? Okay, then
Dominic.
let's do
here
that.
Here in the summer, there's not as many students.
Yeah. And there's no architect required for this, right?
No, sir.
Okay.
Now, we were at the city just today to make sure that we were meeting the codes of the city that they have.
Mm-hmm.
There's particular codes and our setbacks. We've already actually done the design and have already got the specs from.
This would just be fencing?
Just fencing. Exactly.
Okay.
So no architect. We went to the city to confirm that we don't need that. They agreed with where we had outlined the fence at
mm-hmm.
CHS. They're agreeing with what we had.
It's complete enclosure?
What's that?
Complete enclosure?
Yes, complete enclosure with gates and all.
We're the only high school in El Paso that's not fenced, you know that.
No, I was not aware of that.
Yes, we are.
Is it the front from the street?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm not certain whether Mr. Goitia went today to the city. I haven't spoken with him. It was about 3:30. He had asked the city whether it could be at the street or recessed that big island back.
the city has certain codes that won't allow the fence on the front street, so I don't know what the results
could
are.
Could you put a note in the Thursday package?
Yes, yes, I would, with what was discussed on with the city.
Yeah, yeah, Franklin. Part of it's not closed in, Franklin.
The back.
The city has recently revised their...
And the side.
They're secure.
And the back and the side.
Thank you.
I move to table item L.
I'll second.
It was our...
Okay.
Second.
There's some motion and a second. Mr. Coronado?
Yes.
Mrs. Gonzalez?
Yes.
Mr. Medina?
Yes.
Mrs. Mendoza?
Yes.
Mrs. Quintana?
Yes.
Mr. Rodriguez?
Yes.
Mrs. Simmons?
Yes.
Thank you for indulging us with that few moments.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you.
Mr. Rodriguez, is it okay if Ms. Ellis goes first with a Q, or do you want to go before the Q?
I have the Q. And, you know, I can't quite get comfortable with the Q. And I'll tell you why. It seems very conflicting. I spoke this to Mr. Gatlin the other night. It seems conflicting. Our policy is that anything over $10,000 comes to the board. Our policy also reads that you don't need an architect for anything unless it's over $50,000. So I foresee that no matter what happens, you've got to come back to the board before you do anything anyway. Am I correct that it's coming back to the board?
Yes, ma'am.
And I just see that as a conflict. I don't see it as something that's good. We haven't had accountability from the architects. We haven't had a really good issue with architects through the past few years. And I hate to just open the door and give a blank okay to something. I feel that it's coming back to the board no matter what, and that it could be approved on a project-to-project basis. And I don't understand why that isn't okay.
Okay, the RFQ is a request for qualifications. So what we're doing is identifying the highest qualified architect for the projects that we're, you know, the small projects for the district in the future. So we're really not actually going into a contract with them. What that will do is allow us to choose that as the highest qualified architect. Then we will actually enter into negotiation with the architect, either on an hourly basis, or we could also do it by, correct me if I'm wrong, Steve, as the projects come up, we can actually go and negotiate the cost for each project, and then that will be presented to the board at that time.
Are we locking ourselves in then to just one person?
Yes, ma'am, one architect.
And so that gives us no room for flexibility per project, or if for some reason this doesn't work out, how do we end that? You know, if we take the recommendation on this and it doesn't go so well again, how does that end? How do we say no more?
We have a clause in the RFQ that we can cancel the contract with a certain number of time. I'm sure, I think it's 90 days, but
it's the right to terminate that clause.
What's the need for an architect?
Well, there may not be one. The biggest need right now is the barn project for the CT program.
And was that not design build was the method that we...
But it is going to exceed the $100,000, so we are required to have an architect. Mm-hmm. That is the main reason we...
And so could that not just be brought to us? We need an architect for this. Can it be whoever?
Sure.
And we will enter into negotiations for that project, because that's typically what this board has done on everything. In fact, when 3 years ago we went through all the architects, we took a stand that we weren't going to have a so-called district architect.
Okay. That is totally up to the board. If, as that projects come up, we would go out for bid for an architect every time if you wish. The only thing is, it's just a convenience. If we have a small project, I don't know what would come up. We may have a small project come up next month where we have a a major gas leak or a major break in, you know, concrete or something, we need an architect. That's the only reason we're looking.
And then could you not call one anyhow?
We wouldn't be in compliance with the procurement law. But we have to have one.
I've never seen this happen in all the years I've sat on the board. Nobody's ever gone, oh my gosh, we don't have an architect. What are we going to, no one has ever done that. And that's never come up.
Well, we've had an architect on board in house before. Actually, yeah. It was the same one. So
yes.
He did perform well for us. I mean, it's up to you, man. It's not a problem. We can go out for an architect bid, but like I said, it's an 8-week process. So yeah. We've got a project that's needs to be taken care of right away. It's going to be at least 8 weeks before we can deal with it. That's my only point.
Madam Chair.
And I would be happy to do whatever you wish.
And Lori, the reason was last time we did it because we anticipated there was a ton of smaller projects that we were going to have, and things came up during the bond. For example, we were going to do stuff over at Alderete, and I said, well, we can't do this unless we forgot that we needed to have a master plan for the school. We didn't have one. So we, instead of having to wait and go out for an RFP for him, we had GA was the one that did it. And these small things came up, and we had him. And we didn't have to wait the 8 weeks before we had an RFQ. Not only that, for small projects like that, going out for an RFQ costs us money.
Why did it go away, though?
Because it was just for the bond proceeds from the last bond. That's why.
Well, it wasn't actually. It was just for any. It wasn't
for anything that came up. And
I think it was a one-year contract with 2-year extensions.
But it was because we were going through the last bond that we needed for small projects.
So is this a contract of the same sort, a 1-year contract?
I believe this is a 2-year, and then also we can extend it 3 if the board desires. We would have to bring it back every year for the board to approve.
And that's another thing that I guess I haven't seen a contract. We won't see it until you've done the negotiations.
Right, that's correct. Once you approve the award of the contract, the award of the RFQ, as we're picking the most highly qualified architect. If you approve that, then we would enter negotiations with that architect for an hourly basis, or we could do it on a per project basis. So each time a project comes up and we need that person, we can go into negotiations with them, and then the board would have to accept that and approve it before we proceed with it. So in fact, you still would be approving every project.
Well, we have to. Anything sure. Over $10,000, exactly. That's my primary point.
That's
it's coming
exactly
back
right.
Here anyhow.
That's right.
I don't understand.
You're just cutting out the timeline of the RFQ.
Yeah.
And just real quick, if I might, when you go back to the 2006 bond issue, and this was a discussion when we approved the architects, in the 2011 bond issue, when we went to the 2006 bond issue, the contract clause included small projects, not just bond projects, but outside of the scope of the bond. And so we were able to utilize the way the RFP went out, or the RFQs went out this last time, was for small projects of bond projects. And so when the RFQ, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, when the RFQ went out, that's all we could hire them. And outside the scope of the bond, we don't have an architect for small projects. And so currently our small projects is for Loki. And the outside of, let's say if something were to occur, like the current technology, there was other issues that arrived at NECHES where we as a district had approved a small projects contract. And that my understanding was that's what Phil Awoki was supposed to do, but when we went out for the RFQ, it just included the bond project, so you can't add to that.
That's right. The scope of work that Mr. Armendariz gave me was written just for bond projects, so that's the way we went out. So he did not include
for small projects
any other
in the bond, not outside.
That's
so this is just to
the bond was not a bond project.
And then anything that comes to us. And
I have a problem with 2 years. Our teachers don't even get 2-year contracts. They get a 1-year contract.
You
more than
just
welcome
leave the
to
clause so open to whenever. I mean, it's we could terminate. But when the let's say the K thing comes to us for a design build, you have the architect there. You don't want to. You don't have to. But I mean, I just see it as a time constraint when you look at, let's say something at NECHES were to happen, or let's say there's more CAPE money that comes along, we're going to have to wait 8 weeks till we go out for another RFQ just for the qualifications, and then you go into the negotiations for the proposal or whatever. And so we've done it in the past. I think my understanding was it was already done within this bond program, but I guess the technicality wasn't to allow for unforeseen projects or something.
Right, the way the scope of work was presented from Mr.
Armendariz,
I guess he didn't include that, so that was, when we started looking at it, I think Steve and I even looked at it, we did not see any loophole there where we could use it for anything other than bond projects. Now, another option we could have is we could go with the top three, we could award it to the top three the way they're ranked, and then when a project comes up, we can negotiate with the first one. If we're not happy with that price, then we can go to the second one. Is that correct, Steve? So we could actually award this to three and then come back with three different quotes, or one, and if we don't like it, we go to the next one and bid on it. So this just, it's going to speed up the process. Every item would still have to be presented to the board for approval at the time of entering into a contract. So I hope I've explained this best I can. I hope you need more information. I'd be happy to answer another question.
From a facilities management standpoint and what we're looking at over facilities, the intent for us and why we're interested in this is that because a lot of the schools have come together in pieces. If you know the history of our schools, and I know you do, a lot of the campuses have come together in pieces. And so a lot of those pieces didn't meet a certain threshold in order to get an architect, to engineer, or to design that addition. In my profession, it's always good for me to receive an architect or an engineer's design when you're going to touch electrical, mechanical, plumbing, or structural, in order to guarantee that the addition, whatever it may be, conform to certain codes, and that's what the architect is there for. And as a prime example of that is that there was a bond project that was completed over Bill Childers, Garcia Elementary, Dana Davenport, and another school. It was district-wide exterior lighting, and that exterior lighting was installed by Facilities and Transportation Department, and it was hooked up incorrectly. And so if you remember some board weekly notables I had sent a long time ago, the incorrect power was being hooked up to that exterior lighting system, and all of the electrical outlets in the entire school were being energized with 220 volts, which is way much more than what a typical electrical outlet should hold. The fuses were popping, there was burning smells all over the district, and we had a huge problem. This was when buyers came in, JCI came in and were doing their work, they were discovering these issues. And so and at that time we didn't have an electrician, a licensed electrician, it was a vacant position. So we were scrambling to try to figure out what the issue was. And what we found out was that due to facilities taking it upon themselves to try to make construction happen, just kind of piecing it together, we did it incorrectly at that time and really could have had a catastrophe on our hands. And really, from a facility standpoint again, the idea for this architect is to have somebody on board right away, even if, as an example, we need to add the light pole somewhere. It'd be a simple sketch. We'd be on an hourly basis. He'd charge, I don't know, $150 an hour. Say, hey, sir, take a look at this. Does that seem right? It does. We get it back, and we have guarantee that it's okay. And that $150 an hour, Mrs. Rose, I see you shaking your head. I mean, I just threw that number out there. I have no idea
what that's about. It's usually $180.
And so that's just trying to safeguard the district and be safe, and that's what.
That's why we have an electrician. That's why we have an HVAC guy. That's why we have a plumber. That's why we have you. That's why we have two other positions in your.
Understand, but they don't design. They're not designers. They take the contract documents or they take plans and specs and they do what's on there. They're not licensed to design systems as an architect is.
Okay. Madam Chair. You know, we had this happen when we redid the middle school, Lori. We found out that we had overloaded the electrical system down there at what was the old high school. And when we took it out and we revamped that campus, we had to do an entire upgrade to the electrical because there were some issues there. Exactly because of some of the things that there wasn't an architect who had done the additions to the additions, and we kept adding computer system that took a lot more load. There was just not enough over at CMS.
I understand the high points. I've just seen nothing but the pitfalls. I've seen the architects just drain our finances recently, and
I'd love to see that report. How much in architecture fees have we seen as an increase non-related to bond program? Non-related to the bond program?
None.
None?
None. There have been no architect. We haven't gone out to design anything other than bond programs. Mm-hmm. I'm not certain there's anything that's been designed that I'm aware of since I've been here.
So it doesn't come up too often?
No, it wouldn't come up. There'd be emergency situations that we would have somebody who would save that 8 weeks. It's not something that we do every day. The other day is an example. We were trying to put an estimate together for some office space here at Central Office. There's some structural, electrical, mechanical, no plumbing. Mm-hmm. And so we ourselves, Mr. Ramos, a facility manager, created his own plan based on what he could assume. He's not a licensed architect, but he went based on that and provided a price to that. Whether or not that's kosher, whether or not we included everything, you know, we're not 100% certain. There's no seal on it. And this is within the city limit. So eventually, if we were going to do that addition, we're not saying we're going to, but if we were to have done something like that, it would have required an architect's seal of approval, because you're touching electrical, mechanical, structural, with that addition. So it's really just saving that.
You know, they've changed up this building so many times, you can't believe that we haven't had an architect.
And I'm scared about that. Yes, ma'am.
We had the architect do it. We got a piece of post right here in the middle of everybody's face. I mean, back to, I see a downside. So,
we've got it.
I think you've heard my concerns.
Thank you
so much.
I make a motion to approve administration's recommendation.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Ms. Gomez.
Mr. Coronado?
Yes.
Mrs. Gonzalez?
Yes.
Mr. Medina?
Yes.
Mrs. Mendoza?
Yes.
Mrs. Quintana?
Yes.
Mr. Rodriguez?
Yes.
Mrs. Searles?
Well, I just like the district to reflect all of my concerns, and keeping with the board, I'll vote yes.
You might want to look at that 1 year thing instead of.
Yes, I would like it to be 1 year, not two.
Well,
can we make a motion just a year, Steve, or?
How
about we just make a motion that you would. Or just a directive that he would present before he uses an architect.
I'd like to see the contract.
Well, that's right.
That we would
come back
see the contract.
You'll definitely see that.
And
we'll
go with three instead of one.
We'll do it at that time for sure.
Yeah, the contract says 2 years and 3 12-month options to redo.
We'll do the 1 year.
1 year.
There'll be a termination clause in there as well.
It's
top three, so that we're not just sole source.
Well, you didn't vote that way.
Oh, okay. Then
the vote was to approve the single one that you presented tonight. Sure.
Okay.
And Lori, just so you know, the contract term is 2 years with an additional three. Renewal, it's five.
So is that what you just voted for, the contract term of 5 years?
When the contract term comes
2 year with 3 12-month options to renew.
The RFQ got approved. Mm-hmm. So the contract has to come to us to approval, right?
Yes. Contract.
So when the contract comes to approval,
that's when
we could insert the language.
Okay.
We could say two with.
I'd love to see a 1 year.
We could
one
say
year.
One and an additional, but an annual renewal, mm-hmm. And that way we don't, you know.
It's approved by the board.
But, yeah. I don't want to go out for an RFQ every year.
But I also don't want to see every month on the warrant list, thousands of dollars. Oh, we had to call the architect. We were plug the plug in, but you know, we thought we might ought to call him first.
This would be
money is
for new construction. Yes, ma'am, I understand. This would be for new construction after approved by you. That you know, if it's over the $10,000 mark, okay. Let's take an example. Something under $10,000 that wouldn't come to you for an approval. We would use our best judgment to conserve the monies and not use it for any little whimsical thing, but it would be something that, again, mechanical, electrical, plumbing, structural, that would be a serious concern of ours. We would seek their opinion on that. But
I understand. I agree.
Thank you, Mrs. Searles.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I do understand your concerns, Mr. Searles.
I'm not cheap. I'm just, I mean...
I'm a taxpayer, too. I
understand. Yeah, we're taxpayers. We just had the man come up here and tell us what's spending money.
Tighten
your belt.
Yeah.
Mr. Rodriguez.
M&M.
Just real quick, some of the concerns that we had in the committee was the fact that we continue to go with Minova. What are we actually looking at when it comes to technology to say, I understand longevity at the same time. Are we, some of the comments were made that possibly because we get that training and that certification so they're allowed. At the same time, how much are we actually having to utilize those individuals to fix in comparison to just a prime example, you had some of the board members just turn over laptops in comparison to Microsoft. And so,
go Microsoft. This is the best.
Like, what? I guess what is our? And I know you're new and at this position. So what are we going to do to make sure that we get whether it's the best laptops for our kids, our students, our teachers? How are we addressing that instead of just going with one company?
We actually, I don't know if you have access to the standardization document that you have. This document shows how much it's costing the district not to standardize. Right? And if you look on page number, I think it's page number 4, if you go back to page number 3, it shows the amount of different computer makes and models that we support. So you look, we still have 68 Dell models that we support. We have 27 HPs, 22 Lenovo's, and we started with the Microsoft tablet. We got two, you know, the professional and then the one that you have.
Yes.
And then we got Apple. So we're pretty open in supporting new technologies, but we gotta make sure that we understand when being too open is really more expensive. We don't have the amount of people with experience to support that growth technology, so we need to control a little bit about that. If you see out of the Dell, HP, Lenovo, and Windows, all of those are Windows-based, Windows 8-based computers. So we're trying to standardize in one type of tablet for Windows 8. That doesn't mean that we're not going to be supporting Apple tablets. Yeah, we're supporting those, but we're trying to standardize in one type of Windows, or at least two type of Windows tablets, right? We started this evaluation of the Lenovo and the HPs close to 1 year ago, right? We bought all those tablets, we pass it around, we have people from CNI, people from cabinet using them, and then we had the decks, we went through those and we said, okay, what's the best one of those two? At that time, Microsoft wasn't one of the ones that we can evaluate. There was no problem. So we evaluated, we decided to have Lenovo. We started talking to Lenovo. It's one of the time that it consumes a lot of our time trying to deploy images. And what an image is that you have a copy or your hard drive, right, that you're trying to deploy when there's new equipment. And that takes a lot of time. So standardization helps us reduce the management of images. So we talked with them. They were the ones that can ship those tablets with the image from Canopy already preloaded, right? So they say, well, this is the best provider. At the end, it's still a Windows 8 tablet, right? And we made the decision of supporting and having Lenovo tablets as the standard for Windows 8 tablets. Like I said, this is not just something that this school district is facing. What all the school districts are facing is that there are so many different models out there that the technology department cannot support. And they come with this new concept of calling it bring your own device, right? which is, I'll give you access to my network, but that's the only thing you will have from me. I won't support your device, right? I won't connect you to any of the internal servers. I just give you access to the web. And by doing that, they can allow the kids to bring any type of device. Now, if we provide the devices, there's some things that we need to take into consideration, right? We have SIPA, COPA, FERPA, all those labs that...
Bless you. Sorry.
that force us to keep logs of what the kids are doing online, right? So if we need to do that, we need a Windows-based tablet that we can manage and that we can, you know, control. Now, if they bring their own, they're on their own, right? They're going to have to find somebody to support it.
Mr. Rodriguez, is that the only question there?
Well, I mean, my question is, I guess, what is the department doing to say, you know what, here's two, three, not just one tablet? Let's say, you know, two different types of system, right? You would have an Apple and you would have a Microsoft. And maybe two within the Microsoft and saying, because I think what we found, and they did as board members, and I think Letty had problems with hers today, right? And so, how are we?
Well, you know,
I just don't want to go completely with one. I think we need to evaluate it on a yearly basis, saying, okay,
no,
and here's the options, not just Lenovo, but here's two options. And do you choose which options?
Maybe it's a deployment type because
exactly.
You have
it's the application services, the right? In order to make it easy for you guys, I don't force you to use the domain account that we need kids to use to get into the account. So that makes it a lot easier. Microsoft, the type of tablet that you have, doesn't have integration with Active Directory. That's why it's cheaper. But if you go with an enterprise version, then you have the Pro, then you have authentication services that business and school, big school districts.
So maybe the standardization that you're talking about isn't really as fine detailed as you already have. I'm pretty sure you already have something for students, mm-hmm. if you're going to deploy the students, something to teachers, something to administrators separately. And I think I echo his concern because the Lenovo tablets that board members have is just horrendous. Maybe tablets as a whole may not be the best deployment for teachers, better for administrators. And I think that's the concern. And I guess this Lenovo standardization would be more for hard desktops or laptops more than not. Is that correct?
It's a migration from a Windows tablet into mm-hmm. something more mobile. And that's, you know, one.
So is this only for mobile devices, this Lenovo standardization?
It's just for mobile devices.
This is just for mobile devices.
The one that we're proposing right now.
Wow. But out of the MNO, the other ones, laptops for purchasing.
Oh, I was considering laptops, mobile devices, but we already have a standardized desktops on Lenovo. We've been purchasing Lenovo desktops for the past 4 years.
Lenovo's are hardy devices. We have them they're great devices. Like you said, for deployment, when you have how many nodes? I mean, how many computers?
And I'm saying,
close to 7,000.
7,000.
What I'm saying is, when we're going out for a bid for a district, right?
Yeah.
We say this is our standard for a Dell, for a Lenovo. Mm-hmm. Bring it to us, not just.
But the difference in a Dell and a Lenovo is huge when you're trying to manage those. And I think that's what providing the standardization.
We already manage it in the district. And what I'm saying is...
We're mismanaging it, right? Because we're just, you know, surviving trying to keep that many devices. And the idea is to reduce that, you know, to be able to save money on the storage, on the imaging, and the support services.
Well, then what's the best product? Let's say Dell versus Lenovo, because that's what we're using, and Dell's something we've used, and I think it's a cash buy. I mean, everybody uses Dell, and now our district's using Lenovo.
Well, we used to use Dell before, and now we're using Lenovo at the offices. So
yeah, and really, right now the hardware the hardware difference is minimal. I mean, it's all of them use products from China. The computer is the same. What makes the difference is the support services side of that one. Who provided warranty services? Like with HP, you know, right now with HP, when an HP computer fails, We need to pay $89 just to have the computer that, you know, died on. And we pay them, and then they say, okay, it's under warranty, or it's not under warranty, but you already pay $89. That's one of the issues that we have in the Northwest. That way it's taking a lot of time to get a computer back, because we had to capture that money from the parent, right? The $89, and then send it to send it to HP. Once they receive it, then we can send it up.
Wow.
For diagnosis. So we don't have to do that in Lenovo. Hope, and we've been working with them for 4 years, and that's the experience. I mean, the Texas said, you know what? They trust us. They said, you have text in your system? Yeah, sign this document. And they said, well, we're going to trust that. You're going to do a diagnosis on it, and then you're going to tell me, okay, this is what's going on. We'll send you the part. You replace it, and that's it.
I would agree that there's similar Dell and Lenovo, but when we're talking about configuration and imaging, it's a whole different other animal.
Right.
I mean, different parts, different everything. So I would agree in standardization. I wouldn't agree on the tablets also so much on Lenovo, but if you're talking just desktops and laptops and stuff like that, it's great. But, I mean, my fellow board members have had a heck of a time with these Lenovo tablets.
So. Yeah, the only problem with the Lenovo, you see, had a tablet, is wireless. Right? Mm-hmm. So to provide images and to deploy it to the students, it's really hard.
Well, I wouldn't provide that to a student.
And at the same time, no offense, but I can give a student a tablet, a Lenovo tablet, and I bet you that they're going to be able to use it in minutes.
Mm-hmm. What are you trying to imply?
I'm just trying to say
everything, Ms. Gonzalez.
I think I want to go back to one of these big books.
He likes paper now.
I think so.
And I also included in the presentation this is an entire system, right? It's not just the tablet what makes a mobile solution, it's also the wireless. So at the same time, the district, a lot of the problems that you were experiencing with connecting to the wireless, and it wasn't the tablet, it was the wireless migration that we were doing here in central office. We have some Cisco access points that we're removing and putting Arrowhead, right? And I had to play with the configuration, so when you go to other places, it can be supported on those.
No more Cisco iOS anymore?
No, it's gone. Not for wireless. We still have standardization on Cisco for every LAN equipment, but not on the wireless. We're moving away from that. You can see out of the graphs that we got from the high school that in a day we're supporting
ridiculous
like 1,500 devices. That means that kids are not bringing just one device. Kids are bringing three devices or four devices, right? And do they ask us to get connection? No, they find ways to get connected. And you can see it there. You know, iPad is the second most traffic that comes out of the high school, and then the Androids. None of those devices we deploy them. They already connected to the network.
I just what I would hope is from here on out that we look at, especially the tablets, and even that we come up with, a year from now. For 2 years, we're looking at Lenovo in comparison to other products and seeing what's in the market because, I mean, now with technology, you never know. So, we're spending more money into research and development. Because, yeah, they might give us a certification, but we might have our employees working on these computers more in comparison to another product that is probably superior to. So, I want to make sure that we're doing our due diligence.
We are, and we're looking, like I said, on those other, tendencies, like bring your own device, what other school districts are doing. I had a chance to attend a call center in Washington, D.C. last week, and it's an international symposium on school district technology. And the problems that we're having, they have it. And not just here in the U.S., right? There's people, like, how do we support all these devices? Which one is the best? Is really the Mate or is it Windows? No, it's just being open, right? And a lot of school districts are saying, you know what? We're going to let the teachers to bring whatever they want, because we can't. There's that so many devices. And I don't know if it works for them, but, that they do it. Other school districts are totally against that. They say, no, we're one-to-one, and we're deploying just one device to everyone. And other ones are going with Google Chrome, you know, a lot of, I mean, every day, every year, the technology changes. And but if we're so open to just support everything, we're going to end up supporting nothing. I'm gonna think it's not gonna be effective enough. It's just
no, I teach a Kindle to work every day.
Exactly.
I don't think we should support it, everything, but we should look at 2 or 3, and then especially on the lab, on the tablets. So I think if we don't start experimenting and we lock up with one, and you know, let's say one other company like Microsoft leads the way for the next 5 years, but yeah, we locked up on Lenovo, then it becomes an issue long term, and so we need to make sure that we're.
I agree.
I'd love to see what other school districts have standardized on as well. Just give a call to their technology director and say, do you have a standardization plan? Do you have a BYOD policy? That way it can mirror what you're doing here, and we can say, oh, okay, the big boys are sort of doing, they have thousands upon thousands of those. We got 7,000, and I'm still blown away by that. That's more than we have students.
I know Socorro just standardizing on all.
Yeah, if we could get a detail on that in the next board packet, that would be great.
So with that, I'll make a motion to approve
second.
We have a motion and a second. Ms. Gomez.
Mr. Coronado?
Yes.
Mrs. Gonzalez?
Yes.
Mr. Medina?
Yes.
Mrs. Mendoza?
Yes.
Mrs. Quintana?
Yes.
Mr. Rodriguez?
Yes.
Mrs. Searle?
Yes.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Flores, thank you for your comment.
Thank you.
And don't buy any more apples. Apples are for trees.
Next agenda item, please.
New business A. Discussion of possible action for FY14 audit services, White, Samaniego, Campbell.
White, Samaniego, and Campbell, and it's that time of year again. It's audit season, and we need to go ahead and formally approve and sign off on the engagement letter to begin the annual financial audit for the year 13-14.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Ms. Gomez.
Mr. Coronado.
Yes.
Mrs. Gonzalez.
Yes.
Mr. Medina.
Yes.
Mrs. Mendoza.
Yes.
Mrs. Quintana.
Yes.
Mr. Rodriguez?
Yes.
Mrs. Searle?
Yes.
Next agenda item, please.
B. Review and approval of the 2014-2015 instruction materials allotment and TEAC certification form.
Yes, I'm on. Good evening, board.
We have a motion and a second. Any discussion? Any questions?
Yes.
Mr. Coronado.
No? Discussion or yes?
No, I said color. I heard two things. Any discussion, and then I heard Mr. Coronado for polling, so I said yes to both.
Yes, okay.
Discussion, yes?
I'll reserve my comment. Never mind. I just had a comment, but I'll.
Okay. Please go, Ms. Gomez, please. Thank you.
Mr. Coronado?
Yes.
Mrs. Gonzalez?
Yes.
Mr. Medina?
Yes.
Mrs. Mendoza?
Yes.
Mrs. Quintana?
Yes.
Mr. Rodriguez?
Yes.
Mrs. Searles?
Yes.
Next agenda item, please.
C. Update a possible action on El Paso County Sheriff's Department SRO proposal, Anthony Police Department, Police Department, and El Paso ISD Police Department.
This is what we
wanted. Let me just preface this with. The goal was to obtain officers in our schools. Right now we have the Anthony Police servicing our high school, and when the back in fall, the Sheriff's Department had a grant that was very attractive. And now, back in December, they voted against it in 30 times, so we came back again, and numbers came up, and they came in February. Yes, no. Upon that, this weekend, Mr. the superintendent from El Paso, Mr. Blanca, we're in communication and wanted to just gave us numbers today. So these are the greatest numbers from BPISD, from a board member requesting them to see El Paso Police Department also, and the Anthony and the Sheriff's Department.
So what we have in our board packet is it correct? These are the most up-to-date ones?
Yes, this is the most up-to-date. We're dealing with El Paso ISD just at 3 o'clock today.
So El Paso Police Department went up from 569 to 786?
And what I'd like to share with you is the information that was provided to you last week, the breakdown, because you received this as well, during last week's board packet,
yes,
indicated that the calendar days for El Paso Police Department were 181 days following just a regular school year where students are in attendance. Because through the Sheriff's Department and Anthony Police Department, the agreement isn't based on number of days worked, and it's more of the contract based on the grant funding and contributions for the Sheriff's Department, and with Anthony based on their the figures they provided as far as their annual salary. We felt it important to compare apples to apples. This presentation with the figures you received today, where it looks like El Paso Police Department increase, was due to the fact that when we calculate that hourly rate by 250 days, the cost is considerably higher, which you can see in that summary of costs.
So that first number that they gave of 569,107, was that a number provided by them?
What they provided was a
187 days. Thank you.
Right.
Same with the EPISD, correct?
That's correct.
So they went from 687 to 521.
Correct.
What number of days was that based on, same?
250 days.
The previous one?
The previous one was with 180.87.
Okay, same.
Manager.
Yes, Mr. Rosen.
Just real quick, Steve, the last meeting we approved, the motion was to, is this information item only, or the fact that I guess the county had approved
the 75%?
The 75%.
On the fourth year.
Then this would just be an information item only, is that correct?
No, at the last, we had some discussion, and I actually listened to the minutes. There were two motions made at the February 24th meeting. One was to approve the county SRO agreement at the 75% level, and that failed. The second motion was to bring back this, what you all called an apples to apples comparison, so you can make a decision. And my understanding is you're going to decide tonight on which option to select.
Okay.
For the reason tonight, because I know the Sheriff's Department is on a timeline. So we were asked to bring in the Paso Police Department and another entity besides
even that
Anthony.
Even
the Sheriff's Department.
Yes!
What?
That's thunder!
I believe that's a sign for, yes, for what we're talking about.
Then it being the lowest cost and the savings to the district and the discussion we have now, we have the apples to apples. I would make a motion that we go with the enter into contract negotiations, or what is it that we need to?
Well, there's going to be an agreement that the Sheriff's Office has already presented. It's a master agreement, is that still correct? It'll still be the master agreement. And there was some discussion that we would have a separate side agreement regarding some particular items with them. That would be a separate contract. If we're going to approve it, we're going to be telling them
that the overtime is not included in there.
Right.
Yeah.
You're going to be approving it based on the funding that was provided by the county, that was presented by the Sheriff's Department. That's a 75% level.
I guess that's the only concern.
I mean, we've had that discussion when it comes to overtime, and it's just us managing that.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have to be.
But will they manage it? Will they do it?
Well, we would have to hold that administration accountable.
I will say we've been, and I'm remiss, our current SRO, some of the most detailed reports we've ever seen.
Yes, yes. Incredible.
It's amazing the detail we receive. Thank you so much for that, honestly.
It is so noteworthy.
It is. But I think the overtime is important here, and I don't know if we can cap it in the contract, or maybe the sheriff can provide a little bit more detail on this. How is overtime to be handled, considering that it is the lowest cost when you're just talking straight hours, but that overtime, you know, the next lowest bid below that is EPISD, and that's about another $60,000 on top, which we could probably realize that in overtime fairly quickly. So I don't want it to be, hey, it looks good on paper, but then overtime kicks in, we have, you know, all this other stuff, and we lose it, you know?
What would the... I mean, and does EPISD include overtime?
Yes. It's included in the cost.
So everything includes overtime except for the El Paso County Sheriff's?
That's correct.
Wow.
And because that to me, I think that PD also includes overtime.
I think Anthony PD also includes their overtime, right?
Anthony PD does include their overtime. The Sheriff's Department is not, neither did El Paso Police Department.
How would that process work with the sheriff?
Good evening. Didn't realize we're doing a marathon session tonight.
Welcome.
The county commissioners are approving the interlocal, which we got the extension to the 31st. They're approving that interlocal on Thursday. So we're now again down to the deadline of having to move forward. Clint and San Rosario have already signed theirs, and that's the ones we're starting April 1st. They are starting with the SRO program next Tuesday. So you all are dealing with us, and that's why I'm here tonight, to find out if you wanted to go with the two or the three and move forward. And if you don't, we're going to offer the remaining to them, because that was what originally the project from the feds was for, $10,000.
Correct.
So that's what we're here for. In regards to the overtime, we've talked to your attorney and we've discussed that. There'll be an addendum to the contract, and that overtime on the addendum onto the interlocal will be whatever their hourly rate would be for additional off-duty work, just like we pay the policeman that's at Albertsons, or just like you pay the policeman that goes to the movie theaters when they're standing there doing overtime. We stressed and talked about it at length, and we talked about it with your attorneys and the superintendent. If for some reason at 3 o'clock, the officer has to make an arrest because, God forbid, there was an assault or drugs were found, that is our problem. That is something, because they're doing duties. So that overtime is part of their job, and that's something the sheriff's office would definitely do, because that's part of their duties. But let's say when you want them to be at a basketball game and it's not law enforcement related, that's different, and that's going to have to be part of the contract. It'll have to be worked out as an addendum to that interlocal. So tonight, really, what we have to do is decide whether you want to go with us and then the number you want to have, and if you don't, then so be it.
But you have three for us right now, is that correct?
Right, that's what we're holding, is three officers for you. And then we can bring the interlocal and finalize it, because you have some time, July 1st, to actually implement all that.
Is there a... This is a contract for the next 4 years. There's no out.
There is not. It's a four-year contract with the sheriff's office.
Mr. Coronado.
How much? What is the overtime fee for each officer?
It's about $50 is what we discussed when we were on this phone call with Mrs. Aguirre and Fernandez.
$50?
$50.
Okay.
Mr.
Hi.
Again, do you have an estimate? I know that we pay overtime to Sheriff's Department officers every year for games and
right.
Do you have an estimate of what we pay every year?
I don't have that number. I have to look. Yeah.
Ma'am, I know that the high school pays $100 per officer per game. We hire 10 officers at every football game.
10?
10.
For how many hours?
Four. 4 hours, I believe. And Ms. Goggin has 10. Is that correct?
4 hours. Mr. Coronado?
I've done the math on the difference between, say, the Anthony Police Department and the Sheriff's Department. Based on the savings that we, if we go with the Sheriff's Department, we'd have a built-in $4,000 roughly per officer per year for overtime. That amounts to about 80 hours or a little over six hours per month per officer. So that covers us about 6.5 hours per month per officer. Anything above that we pay. And that would be in line with, then it would be Anthony Police and Sheriff's are equal. Mm-hmm. With Anthony, if we utilize each officer more than 8 hours per month, or more than 6.5 hours per month, we'd be saving.
Yeah. That's the question I've been wanting answered.
That's the
Thank
math.
You, Mr.
That's
Coronado.
The math.
Yeah.
Ms. Goggins back here is the one that does most of the overtime, and her estimate, as far as I remember, is about 10 hours a week, basically. What is your estimate
on regular work overtime? I don't even get maybe 100 hours a month. But it varies depending on the incident. If you end up having had a late arrest or something,
right,
you know, that could run into 4 hours, just depending on the backup in the jail and the backup of the court to get the magistrate warning and the arrest warrant and everything. But for the school overtime, there's not a whole lot of it. Sometimes there does come into effect, but it's not too bad.
Okay. Question for the Sheriff's Department. In our last February 24th meeting, indicated any law enforcement action that would result in overtime, we wouldn't be covered for it. Is that correct?
We're not paying for us.
We're not paying
for our job. We would normally be doing anyway, because you'd be calling us to make an arrest, or if there was an accident or whatever, you'd be calling for that anyways. We're talking about football games, overtime. We're talking about those kind of events.
That we're already paying for.
That you're already paying for anyway. So mm-hmm. It's that kind of contracting for overtime.
This week, I should see some savings, because we have extra hours available to us.
Right.
Mr. Coronado?
And then there was a jurisdiction issue, too, that we talked
that's,
about.
And maybe I'm missing the jurisdiction issue, because somebody talked about a radio not working from here to here or whatever, and somebody's on a different frequency, somebody's digital, someone's still analog. What is that? I mean, is that posing a safety issue for our students?
Well, the county runs the P25. It's what this multi-million-dollar
P25 system.
Right, system okay. That we just put in. And that's the huge system that they run for the 911 system. Mm-hmm. And there are different frequencies for different jurisdictions and that kind of stuff. So the county ultimately runs the whole system, and then it's joined with the city, and then all the other different okay. agencies are interlinked into that.
So if we were to go, let's say, with Anthony PD?
There should not be any communications issues, period, no matter what agency.
So that issue that is null?
Right.
Okay, thank you.
Communication should not be a problem.
Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Mr. Coronado.
What is your experience on the SROs region-wide on overtime per month?
And I apologize that the commander couldn't be here, but we've done this project before, and when we've had it before, there was no overtime when they did the SRO project. I mean, sure, there could be some kind of rare incident that there wasn't an overtime incident thing. I think that's what Ms. Gaga was talking about, when she said that she has a couple every month, but it's not 10 or 15 hours a week, and when you have three officers, I think it goes back to you would figure out how to manage that.
The other thing, I mean, administratively, if administration were to, there could be cost savings, because instead of, they could flex their hours to actually attend these events instead of paying it out of the current budget.
Right.
So.
But if during the flexing, would that take away from security with the kids?
True.
Yeah.
If you're flexing? That's, you know, I don't want to take that.
I mean, we're already paying for it. We're just saying that there's that possibility. So if there's 2-3 hours overtime that needs to, you know, if you manage it the way it's supposed to be, you say, okay, you know what, you come in 2-3 hours on Friday because you're going to spend 2-3 hours at the football game. I mean, that's happened in the past, and so the SRO program is not just about security, it's about, you know, the relationship with the students and building that rapport so that way we could have safer schools. So, I mean, I'll make the motion to enter into. What is it that we need to do?
You need to state the number that you want, they need to know.
Right.
2 or 3. Into agreed of terms that the county approved for the interlocal agreement.
What's administration's recommendation?
We talked about it 2 minutes ago.
You know, it's been 2 months. Now, I'd first like to commend Anthony, because you all have been there sitting and passing and coming up to the plate to get something going, like you said. There's a lot of feelings. But when you look at the cost, and I guess when you look at the advantages and disadvantages, one, this is a 4-year agreement. And with the other entities, we get 1 year. So every year we get to look at, evaluate, are we getting our money's worth versus the El Paso County Sheriff. So from my initial looking at these additional numbers, if you look at the sheriff, we only would be saving about $38,000 compared to, or $32,000 compared to the company. Nearly at the end of the 40 years, maybe $70,000 with Anthony Sheriff's Department. So if you look at purely numbers, mm-hmm. the Sheriff's Department is the place to go. But again, when this happened in December, and I guess he did retire at Chief Cop, I didn't receive a call from him. I didn't receive any of that. But Anthony has always been there. And with the service of Anthony and the way officers are and Senator Gomez and all that response. I don't know the service from the Sheriff's Department, but I am a loyal customer. So I think administration would be to stay with Anthony. It's been a proven entity. However, if you look at numbers, overall,
it's about 70,000.
Sure. So I know we talked about that.
And you did.
Our recommendation is Anthony.
I would prefer to save money, and so I would make the recommendation that we go.
We have to name the number of officers.
I make a motion to go with El Paso County Sheriff's Department with 3 individuals.
Second.
I have a motion and a second. Ms. Sonia.
Mr. Coronado?
Yes.
Mrs. Gonzalez?
No.
Mr. Medina?
Yes.
Mrs. Mendoza?
No.
Mrs. Quintana?
No.
Mr. Rodriguez?
Yes.
Mrs. Searles?
No.
Motion failed.
I move at this time, Madam Chair, that then the district enter into an agreement with the Anthony Police Department then for 3 officers on a yearly basis at the amount quoted.
Second.
I have a motion and a second. Ms. Gomez.
Mr. Coronado?
Yes.
Mrs. Gonzalez?
Yes.
Mr. Medina?
Yes.
Mrs. Mendoza?
Yes.
Mrs. Quintana?
Yes.
Mr. Rodriguez?
Yes.
Mrs. Searles?
Yes.
Motion passes.
Thank you very much.
Ms. Gomez.
D. Discussion and possible action regarding summer school administrator position and proposed stipends.
Summer administrators.
Ms. Carras.
Good evening. This item was discussed during the committee meeting, and what we had discussed was that our summer school program for this summer has been restructured from what we previously have done. And it's been restructured to a point that we have a savings of $255,000, or over $255,000. And so what we are proposing is that we have a summer school administrator. This position would be for an internal applicant only, and it would be a summer school administrator for the elementary level, for the middle school level, and for the high school level. So we're talking about three administrators.
But not currently a principal.
Not currently a principal.
Thank you.
And that was the discussion. Basically, what we talked about at the committee was the overlapping in time. For example, our principals are at 224, and we do have a couple of APs at 224 days. And so the committee's concern was that they're already on duty, and of course this is something that summer school was put together before by the sitting administration at the campuses. However, we have visited this item. We've talked with the principals, and I believe, I mean, you heard Ms. Rocha this evening, there are a lot of activities going on during the summer. And what we would like to do is have one person overseeing the coordination of summer school at each of the levels. And so by saying not a sitting principal, that would give opportunities to an AP or an instructional coordinator or any other person that is off calendar that would like to work for the summer. The proposed is that for elementary level, we give a $3,000 stipend, for the middle school level, a $3,000 stipend, at the high school level, it'll be $4,000. And this will be for the duration of summer school. However, as Ms. Rocha pointed out, summer school planning starts now. And so it would be, you know, evenings and weekends, and, you know, to start coordinating all the efforts that we have to do to get ready for summer school. It is only, you know, a short amount of time in comparison. However, the preparation for it, and once it gets going, the intensity of time cards and the running the day to day, and this would alleviate our principals for preparing for the coming school year. That's what we're proposing. Yes, ma'am.
I had asked you this during the committee, but you mentioned no principals, but APs, and these APs are on duty, correct?
APs are on duty. They're on a 219, and I have two APs on a 224 contract.
Okay.
So they are.
So they would be not double dipping, but kind of.
Well, they would be performing these additional.
Yes or no?
Summer school.
Yes or no?
It's a stipend like any other stipend. When
yes
you
or no?
Stipends? No, ma'am.
No?
No.
Are they on duty?
They are on duty, yes, ma'am.
Okay, thank you. Okay, I so move.
I'll second it.
Thank you.
We have a motion and a second, Ms. Gomez.
Mr. Coronado?
Yes.
Mrs. Gonzalez?
No.
Mr. Medina?
Yes.
Mrs. Mendoza?
Yes.
Mrs. Quintana?
No.
Mr. Rodriguez?
Yes.
Mrs. Searles?
Yes.
What was that?
It sounds like a big vote.
I'd like to mark for the record that's the weakest yes.
Thank you, Mr. Medina.
It didn't happen.
Wow.
Motion passes.
Thank you, Ms. Martha. Thank you very much.
Executive session. The meeting is to be called under the Texas Government Code sections 551.071, 551.074, and 551.072.
It is 9 away.
Hold on. You actually need to read the topics that are going to be discussed in closed session.
A discussion with Audit Executive Director regarding assigned audit tasks to include personnel issues and to receive advice from legal counsel regarding audit items. B. Personnel. Consider recommendation of Bill Childers, elementary principal. C, discussion regarding the status of potential purchase of real property for EPCWID.
So did you get my text?
Anybody have a portable CD player?
Yeah.
I know it's hard. You would think I would know, like the board meetings, but that's how my wife actually knows where I'm at. It's weird because we share calendars too. So any board meetings or committee meetings, or special board meetings, just make sure that I'm copied on the invite. Thank you, ma'am. Do you know when to get those travel packets? Because I don't think I'm going to be in for next week's meeting. No? She's not ready? Oh my God. What?
Are you guys laughing at me?
Yes, I'm sorry.
Yes, please. I mean, where would it be? Make sure. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Can you guys